is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. It's nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He's going to come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, much to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on this Friday afternoon in Orchard Park, New York. We're in the AdPro Sports Training Center. John Murphy and Donald Jones, happy Friday and happy Easter coming up, Donald.
Yeah, it's definitely a happy Friday and good Friday and a happy Easter. Do you miss making those calls?
Yeah, I love doing those games. I can't wait. I wish we had more. I wish we had a couple of playoff games. I wouldn't miss them so much. Yeah.
Go all the way into February.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
We got a jam-packed show coming up for you here today, and a lot of actually some pretty interesting news around the NFL. You know by now the one of the owners in the NFL passed away. Dan Rooney of the Pittsburgh Steelers passed away late yesterday. We're going to talk with Joe Horrigan, who is the executive director of the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, about Dan Rooney, his impact on the league, what he meant to Pittsburgh and the Steelers. Joe Horrigan's going to join us today in just about 15 minutes from now. Coming up at 12:30, a familiar name to Bills fans, Butch Roll, tight end for the Buffalo Bills in the Super Bowl era, played here from 86 through about 1991. With that incredible string of touchdown catches. We were looking it up today and marveling about that, Donald.
14 straight catches for touchdowns?
Yeah, with no other catches.
Yeah, nothing in between. I'd take that. Now, this was over a course of, what, 2 years or
I think it was
like
over
that?
A couple of seasons. We'll get with Butch and talk to him about that. Isn't that amazing?
I'd definitely take that, man. Call me Touchdown Butch. What was his nickname? Did they have a nickname for him?
I don't remember if there was a nickname. I don't think there was. Man. How about the fantasy value of Butch Roll?
Oh, yeah.
Every time he catches it, he scores a touchdown.
What do you think? I wish we had a fantasy guy on so we can ask. The next fantasy person we have on, I'm going to ask. If somebody had 14 straight catches for touchdown, no other catches, no other yards, nothing like that, just 14 straight catches for touchdown, where would you draft that person?
Butch Roll is the guy we're talking about. He'll be with us live. He's got a special charity fundraising bowling tournament to benefit the Butch Roll Caring for Kids Foundation coming to Buffalo in a couple of weeks. We'll talk with Butch Roll today at 12:30. The draft, of course, looms large, just a couple of weeks away now, 2 weeks from yesterday, round one of the draft, 2 weeks from today, rounds two and three. Bucky Brooks, another former Bill, former Bills wide receiver, former second-round draft pick, going to join us at 1 o'clock. He is an analyst now, a draft analyst. He goes deep into the draft for the NFL Network, and Bucky Brooks will join us. He's got a mock draft up there with the Bills going to Mike Williams and his mock draft. So draft talk with Bucky Brooks coming up at 1 o'clock this afternoon. And coming up at 2, we're going to talk with Jeff Christensen, a former NFL quarterback. Jeff Christensen is a quarterback guru. His name came up just the other day, 2 days ago, when we had Cardale Jones on. Cardale said he's been working with Jeff Christensen. And come to find out, Jeff Christensen has a lot of quarterbacks that he works with, including many of the quarterbacks in this year's draft, many quarterbacks who are already in the NFL. We'll talk with Jeff Christensen about making quarterbacks in the NFL, what it takes and what to expect from some of these players in the draft, these quarterbacks in the draft. He's going to join us at 2. Plus, we have our mock draft review. We take a look at who some of the top draft experts are mocking to the Buffalo Bills. Now we're inside the final 2 weeks of the draft. That's always fun.
Yeah.
We can agree and disagree on who they think the Bills will wind up with.
Exactly. And we know it will change like every day from now until the draft.
Yep. Our mock draft review is coming up today, plus fake news, real news at about 2:30 or so, which we always enjoy.
Yeah. We know by the time we get to fake news, real news, the show is coming to an end.
The day is almost over.
Right, exactly. So
that's the lineup for today. We welcome your input. You can do it on the phones at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550 or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Our Twitter poll is up. It deals with the draft. We've kind of danced around the draft on Twitter for a long time now for the last few weeks, and here comes a kind of an off-the-beaten-path question on Twitter, up on our Twitter poll. What would be the shock for the Buffalo Bills in the first round for you? What move would totally surprise you if the Bills made this move in the first round? What would be the most surprising move the Bills could make in the first round of the NFL draft a couple of weeks away? That's our Twitter poll. You can weigh in via Twitter. You can do it over the phone lines. Our Twitter poll, what would be the most surprising move the Bills could make in the first round of the draft? About 200 votes in so far. Right now, the leader is a trade up. We've talked about that a lot, how difficult it is to trade up. Everybody wants to trade up. I talked to Doug Whaley about it a couple of weeks ago. He said it's very difficult. You know, no one wants to trade down people, or no one wants to
trade up.
Or yeah, trade up would be a difficult thing for any team to do, and teams don't want to trade up for the most part, especially when you only got six draft picks like the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, when you only have six picks in the draft, you know, even if you had a bunch of picks, it's tough. Teams really don't want to trade up, because trading up, it's not just giving away draft picks. It's like trading players away. It's a lot that goes into that, you know, and especially in a deep draft, it really doesn't make sense for a lot of these teams to trade up. You know, if they're going to trade up and give away a fourth round pick when you can still get starters in the fourth round, I don't know if teams will be willing to do that. I'm sure it's going to happen, but you have to really fall in love with the player. Like the Bills obviously fell in love with Sammy Watkins. You really have to fall in love with the player for you to trade up. And so I don't see it happening. There aren't too many guys that you hear teams are like, oh, they're falling in love with this guy. Even the first round, even the number one overall pick right now is up in air. Like, yeah. Nobody knows what's going to happen with that.
So most of our Twitter respondents say a trade up would be the most surprising. 34%, a third of them say trading up would be the most surprising, a move the Bills could make in the first round. 27% say drafting a running back would be surprising in the first round. They may draft a running back later on, but a first-round running back, not very likely, not with LeSean McCoy in the roster. 22% say drafting a quarterback, which I think surprises me a little bit. I mean, that's a pretty good chunk of the Twitter respondents, only a couple hundred votes in so far. But, you know, the way people kind of lock onto the quarterbacks and fall in love with quarterbacks, I'm talking about fans and media people, it just surprises me that there's that many fans who say that would be a huge shock to draft a quarterback first round.
I think people are listening to everyone talk about it, and they listen to us talk about it, and how these quarterbacks, you know, most of them, if not all of them, really shouldn't be first-round draft picks. And so you look at what they did with Tyrod, and you look at what they really need on the defensive side of the ball and at receiver, people are probably thinking it really doesn't make sense to take a quarterback at the number 10 spot. You know, you can take one in the third round. You can take one in the fifth round. Maybe even in the second round, if one of these guys falls to the second round, but it doesn't make sense to take one of these guys at 10. So that would be shocking to a lot of people, and definitely be shocking to me.
And the last option we offer on what would be the most surprising move the Bills would make in the first round of the draft, that if they do not draft a wide receiver or a defensive back, 17% say that. So it's something to think about. We all know, you know, you all have our favorites, what you'd like to see the Bills do. We all have our thoughts on what the Bills should do. I guess we're looking to find out from you what would shock you if the Bills did that in the first round. Again, it's up on Twitter at John Murphy Show. What would be the most surprising move the Bills could make in the first round of the NFL draft? Right now, a trade up is what most of you say. All right, a couple of news items, and we touched on this. We're going to talk with Joe Horrigan of the Hall of Fame in a moment, but the Pro Football Hall of Fame lost one of its members, and really the NFL lost one of its key owners late yesterday when Steelers chairman Dan Rooney passed away at the age of 84. He took over the team from his father, Art Rooney, the legendary Art Rooney, who founded the franchise in Pittsburgh. Dan Rooney oversaw six NFL championships. And the amazing thing is, Donald, you know, you think of the Steelers now, you think of this great franchise winning Super Bowls, the Lombardi Trophy, stability in the coaching ranks. Before Dan Rooney took over, the team had never before played in an NFL championship game.
Hmm.
They won four championships in 6 years. They've had three coaches over all this time, Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and, of course, Mike Tomlin now. Really one of the flagship franchises in the NFL. Art Rooney founded the team. Dan Rooney is the one who solidified the Steelers as one of the really building blocks of the NFL. And never had a chance to meet him. You know, a couple of years ago, the Bills went down to Latrobe and practiced for a few days with the Steelers. Joint practices down at St. Vincent's down there.
Mm-hmm.
Had a chance to observe Mr. Rooney, who was very low key. Just kind of made his way around the building. Had the respect, and you could tell the affection of a lot of Steelers employees and Pittsburgh fans. I mean, there's an awful lot of fans down there at their training camp. But people who worked with him, players who played for him, obviously the coaches who coached for him, speak about him reverentially. People really, really appreciate Dan Rooney, and it is a major loss for the NFL.
It is a huge loss for the NFL. I think, you know, people in my generation and you know, people that are, I guess, a little bit younger than me, when you talk about franchises that, you know, if your franchise is not winning right now and you say, who would you model a franchise after? People in my generation would probably say the Patriots, right? Because the Patriots have been on top for a while now. But if you've been watching football for a long time, the Steelers is the franchise that you really, you know, you want to model something after, because you talk about what, three head coaches they've had, so many Super Bowls. They keep their players in-house that they draft. They really do well by their coaches, by their players. And it really all starts with that man, Dan Rooney, you know, and he was great for the league. It's really sad to see him pass on now. It's tough for the league.
Did you see some of the reaction from some current Steelers players? Antonio Brown, mm-hmm. What did he say? I wear 84.
Yeah.
He said, I'm going to wear it in your memory now. You're 80 because of your 84 years on this earth. I mean, Dan Rooney's impact went across generations when you think of those young Steeler players now and guys going all the way back to the Bradshaw era and even before that in the 1960s, mid-1960s.
And his impact, especially when you talk about the Rooney Rule,
yeah.
Which came into place obviously under him. The Rooney Rule is something that gave these coaches and executives an opportunity to be interviewed. They have to be. You have to at least interview one person, one minority, you know, GM for whatever position. You have to interview at least one minority, and I think that's a great thing for this league because you had a long time where, you know, guys weren't being interviewed. Now you do still have where people think, you know, they're just interviewing that one person just because of the rule is in place, but at least the rule is in place. So yeah. It gives those guys an opportunity to be there and be interviewed. And maybe you can blow the doors off of one of these owners or something like that, but at least gives these coaches and these GMs an opportunity to be at the table
yeah.
and interview for that position.
I heard a soundbite today from Dan Rooney, and they asked him about the Rooney Rule when it was instituted, and we'll talk with Joe Horgan about this, and he said, you know, there was no real revelation. He said, we just looked around and realized that minorities were not getting the opportunities they should,
mm-hmm.
and we thought it was the right thing to do. And for so much of what Dan Rooney did in the NFL, it seems like he followed the path of what was the right thing to do. And we're going to talk with Joe Horgan from the Hall of Fame about that in just a couple of minutes. But really, I think a major loss. When you see you and I watched, I think it was an ESPN segment yesterday about the Raiders move and the interplay between Bob Kraft and Jerry Jones,
yeah.
the current NFL owners, the current, like, foundational owners for the NFL. What a difference from that group and Dan
and today,
Rooney.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just
it's
kind
big
of a different worldview, I think. And, yeah, Rooney was 84. These guys are 15 years younger. But still, just a different perspective on the NFL.
Way different perspective on the league and probably, like, moving teams around and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like you said, he was more of, you know, doing the right thing, not just from business. Obviously, you have to make the best business decisions for the league and for your franchise individually. But it's also about doing the right thing by, you know, by the fans, by your coaches, by your executives that work for you, all employees, your players. It was more about doing the right thing and not just making money.
Yeah, finding the extra nickel.
Right.
So we'll talk about that with Joe Horgan in a couple of minutes. The other thing that comes across this morning, this came out, Dean Blandino, who's been a guest on the show. You know that name from his work as the officiating vice president. He's been vice president of officiating in the NFL since 2013. He's stepping away. Dean Blandino is leaving the NFL. Reports are that he's going to go work in broadcasting. There are a couple of varying reports. Some say he'll go to CBS. Some say he'll go to Fox. But Dean Blandino is stepping away from his role as vice president of officiating. He's done it for the last 4 years. Well, not the most popular guy, I guess, Donald, but I always found him to be coherent. I always found him to be kind of clear in his explanations. I thought I think it was weekly videos the league would put out with various rules interpretations and the why things were called the way they were. I thought that was extremely helpful. I think this is a loss for the NFL in many respects, including the fact that they've got this brand new centralized replay mm-hmm. officiating review going on in New York. And let's face it, Blandino, I think, inspired some confidence among owners who voted to approve this a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that right there is interesting that this whole thing happened, right? That just went through, what, last week? And now this week, you know, he's deciding that he's going to resign and take a broadcasting job. It's crazy that whole thing happened because, you know, like you said, he was probably the main person that said we should do this. And then the owners go ahead and vote it through, and then you decide, all right, now I'm going to leave. That's tough.
Surprising. And as I said, I always found Blandino to be coherent and clear. And I think there was I've been at news conferences conducted, a kind of a genuine effort to explain why the rules are called the way they are. An extremely high-pressure job, no doubt about that. A lot of focus on it. Maybe, you know, the focus will be even stronger now, more intense with the centralized replay review, and maybe that's why he wanted to get out.
I hope so. I hope it wasn't just about money. Like, I hope he wasn't just getting more money to go into broadcasting and do what Mike Pereira does over at Fox. You know, I hope that there is another reason that he's leaving, because if it's just about money, like, if you were offered a broadcasting job now, that means that you would be offered a broadcasting job next year, too. At least stick it out through one season and see how this thing plays out, this whole centralized officiating thing. But he decided it's time to go.
So we'll talk about that also as the show goes along today as well. But as we said, the big news came out late yesterday with the news from Pittsburgh that Steelers chairman Dan Rooney passed away at the age of 84. Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline is the executive director of the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton. Obviously, Dan Rooney is a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame for the last 17 years or so. We're happy to have Joe Horgan, good friend of the show, on with us. Joe, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones. Thanks for joining us today on what's a pretty sad day, I think, for the pro football world.
Yeah, it really is, and you know, Dan has been a longtime friend for many, many years, and you know, I was writing something a little while ago about him, and you know, I said something that, you know, I wrote something, and I almost fell out of character for myself, because you know, we always say when a guy is elected to the Hall of Fame that there's no ranking, everybody's equal. Once you're in the Hall of Fame, you're just in the Hall of Fame. Everybody's the same. I started to think about it, and I started thinking that, you know, there are exceptions, and I mean this not to say that anyone is better than anybody else, but there are just those certain few that kind of transcend everything in the sense of what they meant to the game, and I really put to Dan Rooney in that category, because there's that intangible with some people that, you know, that isn't reflected necessarily on the football field that Dan epitomized in a quiet, professional manner. He did things that he never took credit for, and he was very careful not to take credit for, because he was a great behind-the-scenes guy that worked with everybody since Bert Bell as far as commissioners go, but I think worked really very effectively with Pete Rozelle and Paul Tagliabue in particular in getting things done, forming consensus among the owners. That is, you know, no easy task when you're dealing now with 32 different owners, 32 different personalities, and a lot of agendas. But he was always that guy, kind of, as we say, John, about Ralph Wilson being the conscience of the NFL. There were those certain guys that were just exactly that, and they did it because it was right, not because it was easier, not because it was financially the soundest thing to do. They did it because it was right. And I put, you know, Dan in that category. He was a good man, good friend, and really great for pro football.
Your point about how all the Hall of Famers are equal is well taken, Joe. But the fact that the Hall of Fame acknowledges the passing of Dan Rooney with lowering the flag outside the hall in Canton to half staff, that's significant, right? I mean, I don't recall that ever being at least publicized, if it's even been done before.
Yeah, it's you know, kind of one of those things where, you know, it's a very simple thing that we can do, and I know there's, you know, some sensitivities, and we acknowledge it that it's traditionally, you know, something that is done for someone who's, you know, lost their life in the military service, or, you know, along those lines, and we understand that. But there are those occasions where, as an organization, you know, we just feel like, you know, there's something that this person did for literally the betterment of quality of life of people, not just pro football. I mean, you know, the Rooney Rule is something that has changed the way football was played, perceived, and it moved on out of football into corporate America. It became made everything much more discussable, if you will. And that was just the kind of person that Dan was, and I think that his legacy is one that, you know, we all feel hurt by his loss. So, you know, it was a simple gesture, but, you know, there's other ways we'll recognize Dan as well, sure.
Joe, John and I were just talking about Dan and how it seemed like the things that he did throughout the league and throughout his years in football was not just about making money, but it was about, like you said, the embetterment of people. We always talk about these moves that have happened in the league, with Oakland moving to Vegas and the Rams going back to L.A., the Chargers moving to L.A. Do you think that Dan would really approve of something like this? Do you think he was really on board with all of these teams moving and leaving these cities that really have supported them for so long?
No, I'm sure in his heart of hearts that it was probably killing him, because, you know, these are things that were near and dear to him. He understood community, and he understood, you know, there's, you know, cities like Buffalo and Pittsburgh and Cleveland that, you know, the team really does belong to the people.
and he believed that. I mean, this wasn't anything that I'm saying that he wouldn't agree with. I know him. It was just, you know, a team becomes a part of a community, and if done correctly, and you know, whenever possible, communities will support it. There becomes economic factors in this multi-billion-dollar business we're all in now that changes that. And it used to be decisions were really made as a part of a community as opposed to just an economic advantage. And it's just the way the world is, I guess. But I know it hurt him even to be talking about it. And, I mean, his father, going all the way back, literally almost lost the Pittsburgh Steelers due to the economics of his own personal situation, to the point where he literally swapped franchises with the Philadelphia E.
Oh, did we lose you, Joe?
Oh,
there you are. Okay.
The Eagles and the Steelers actually, you know, flipped franchises at one time, so that both would remain in their cities. It was you know, kind of an unusual arrangement, but that's how they worked in those days. Arthur, Dan's father, you know, you did what you had to do to stay in your community and remain viable. They merged his team with Eagles during the war. He had a manpower shortage, yeah. And second time he merged with the Cardinals just to stay afloat. So this was a culture that he grew up in and lived every day. It was always league fanship, team and community.
We're on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with Joe Horgan, Executive Director of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, talking about the death of Steelers Chairman Dan Rooney yesterday. Joe, the Steelers went from like in the 60s, mid-60s into the late 60s as sort of an NFL laughingstock. Dan Rooney takes over, and all of a sudden they're winning Super Bowls. You know, an incredible, you know, six NFL championships when they hadn't even gotten a whiff before he took over. What happened to the Steelers? What turned that around for them?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that happened, but they all happened kind of at the same time. And while Dan was really took over the administrative reins from his father, Art Rooney, founder of the team, and started looking at it in a from a business perspective. Dan, that was his education at Duquesne. But the other thing that happened is that he was smart enough to get the right people in personnel decision. That happened to be his brother, Art Jr. He literally started the Lesto scouting system. And together, you know, Art and Dan and people who worked with them made better decisions on the personnel side. Most importantly, it began with signing Joe Green. And Joe Green, you know, if you talk about a single player that turned the fate of a franchise, a team, and a city around, that's the guy, because he became the face of Pittsburgh, and he became the face of the success of the Steelers as they began to build. Then shortly thereafter, adding Terry Bradshaw, Lou Swan, John Stallworth, defense, Jack Lambert, a lot of guys like Lambert, but at Kent State. I mean, these were done through the scouting system that they really didn't have prior to Dan and his brother Art really taking over the organization.
Joe Horgan, the executive director of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I keep thinking I thought a lot about Ralph Wilson today, Joe, when the news came out.
Sure.
It's a certain, I don't know, breed of NFL owner that seems to be fading away from the scene. Would you agree?
I would definitely agree with that. And, you know, there were so few franchises that were family-owned anymore, and Ralph certainly represented one, and Bud Adams with the Oilers and Nashville, with the Tennessee Titans, and then obviously the Rooneys and the Maras, the McCaskies, which are the second family lineage of the Halas family with the Chicago Bears. They're getting to be fewer and fewer. The Bidwells out in Arizona, they've been the NFL for many years. So there's fewer and fewer family and generational passing of teams out there, and there is a philosophical change. It really is, and I'm not saying it's good or bad. It is the reality that things change and we move on. But the game, as we know it, is still pretty much the same on the field, but in the box office and in the boardrooms, there's a lot of different types of approaches to presenting the game to fans.
Hey, Joe, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it, and thank you for sharing your thoughts about the passing of Dan Rooney.
My pleasure, John. Always good to talk to you.
Thanks. Joe Horgan is the executive director of the Pro Football Hall of Fame on the line with us from Canton, Ohio, talking about the death of Dan Rooney yesterday at the age of 84. It was acknowledged by the Bills organization, Terry and Kim Pegula, issuing a statement late yesterday on the passing of Dan Rooney that says, Dan Rooney is one of the true pioneers and pillars of the National Football League and deserves a lot of the credit for the success that our sport has enjoyed for a very long time. On top of that, he was as classy and nice of a man as you will ever come across. On behalf of the Buffalo Bills and our great fans in Western New York, we send our condolences to the Pittsburgh Steelers and to the Rooney family. I always felt, Donald, look, the Steelers have those championships, we don't, but I always felt there was a bit of a kinship between the Bills, at least the Bills fans and this organization, and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Certainly they're a model organization to look up to, I think.
And is that because, obviously, they're close? I mean,
yeah,
Pittsburgh is not that far
bit.
From here.
Yeah.
You talk about Ralph Wilson and Dan Rooney and these family-owned organizations going all the way back, really, to the beginning of the NFL. Is that what you're saying right there?
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's the and Joe pointed it out, yeah, because they're family-owned organizations representing, you know, blue-collar kind of Rust Belt cities. And the fans remind me of each other a little bit.
They do,
the
right?
Bills fans and the Steelers fans. They're great fans down there in Pittsburgh.
I don't know. I mean, the way it looks like the league is going, obviously the fans are always going to cheer for their teams, man, but the way teams are just moving city to city now, like you said, you don't know how good this is for the league. And
I don't think it's good at all.
Yeah, exactly. Long term, like, what does this do to the NFL? The fact that you have, you know, seemingly different ownership, even though you have owners that have been owners for a long time, but it's like the agenda now is just a little bit different than it was way back in the beginning.
I agree. And Doug Whaley, who kind of cut his teeth in pro football with the Pittsburgh Steelers, a Pittsburgh native, the Bills general manager, issued a statement on the passing of Dan Rooney. It reads like this. Doug Whaley says, being a native of Pittsburgh, I know what Dan Rooney and the Rooney family have meant to the region and all of Steelers Nation. He hired me twice and was very instrumental to me being where I am professionally. More importantly, the life lessons he imparted to me helped me grow as a person, a husband, and a father. My condolences go out to the Rooney family and the Steelers organization. It's a big one. I mean, again, I think one of the pillars of the NFL, Dan Rooney. That's why we acknowledge it and talk with Joe Horgan about it today. When we return, we're going to talk with one of the Bills, one of the role players, I guess you'd call him, from the early Super Bowl teams. Butch Rolle, still active in this area and in his native area of South Florida in a number of charitable endeavors. We'll reminisce with Butch Rolle about the Bills of the late 80s, early 90s, and talk about a charity bowling tournament that he's got coming up here in Buffalo in just a couple of weeks. So come on back for that. The John Murphy Show, presented by NEPA Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to John Murphy Show, presented by NEPA Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones here until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We got draft talk coming up at 1 o'clock with Bucky Brooks from NFL.com. And we're going to talk about quarterbacks. Love to talk about quarterbacks. Jeff Christensen joins us coming up today at 2 o'clock. Going to kind of reminisce a little bit about Buffalo Bills history and talk about a special charity bowling event coming to Western New York in a couple of weeks. Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a man who played tight end for the Bills 1986 through 1991. He was on the early Super Bowl Bills, and we're happy to have Butch Rolle on the line with us. Butch, John Murphy and Donald Jones up here in Buffalo. You're down there in sunny South Florida, huh?
Yes. Hey, guys. Hey, John. Hey, Donald. How you doing, guys? I'm sorry. The weather here is, 78 degrees? I don't know what the Buffalo weather is. I'm not trying to rub it in, but I just thought I'd share that with you.
No, we're good.
I'm not trying to rub it in, but I'm trying to rub it in.
We're good, Butch. It's, 55, 60, sunny up here. We're all right with it. You spend a lot of time. I was telling Donald, you get up here quite a bit, though, whenever there's a significant alumni event or Jim Kelly's golf tournament or, Bruce going on the Wall of Fame, having his number retired last fall. You get up here quite a bit, don't you?
Yes, I do. Buffalo's still my second home, and, my kids are there. So I live in Florida, but my heart is still in Buffalo, and that's going to always be the case because the city of Buffalo gave me my first opportunity to be who I am today and allow me to play in the NFL and, be a part of a great team back then with Jim and those guys. And, I'm fortunate to be there and fortunate to have been part of that, and I'm happy for that. So I'm always going to be there being part of Buffalo.
But it just seems like the only time you come is when it's warm here.
I'm telling you, Don, I was there so much because the kids were growing up. I was there in Buffalo. I was there more than I was in Florida. So I've had time to be in the cold weather. But now I can kind of say that you might be right. I try and come when it's not as cold because I don't have to really be there as much, but I'm used to the cold regardless, and it's not a problem with me. It's good to see the different changes of weather, you know, the seasons.
Hey, Butch, you were drafted by the Bills out of Michigan State in 1986, seventh-round pick, and I wondered, you came in a really good draft class if you look back at it. I mean, a lot of the nuts and bolts and important pieces of that Super Bowl run came out of that 1986 draft for the Bills, wouldn't you think?
Absolutely. Three of the tight ends were in that seventh round, me, Bob Williams, and another tight end we had. And they had Mark Pike, so we had a three seventh-rounders, and, you know, NFL is made up of guys, a core of guys. You have your first rounder. Of course, everybody wants to be a first rounder, but that's not going to happen, of course. But it's all about heart. When you get there, you do your job, you stay healthy, and you produce, and you be part of a good team. And I was fortunate to be part of a great team back then in the Bills' run with those four Super Bowls. And, you know, I play with a lot of guys that, you know, I keep in touch with Andre. You know, I see these guys on Facebook, and, you know, we keep in touch with each other. And it's always going to be like, it's a brotherhood, and that's what I like about football. It's a brotherhood, and, you know, we stay in contact with each other forever and, you know, become close and become good friends. And, you know, when they have their events, like I'm always at Jim's event, and I go to Andre's bowling golf event, and it's just being part of the community and being part of the whole realm of things.
But you held a streak of 14 consecutive receptions for touchdowns, just catches for touchdowns. What was that like when you were going through that whole thing?
Everybody still talks about that. I like that their record is there, but unfortunately, I was a big and big, strong guy. I used to work out with the linemen with Kent Hall, Will Wolfgang, God rest his soul. I worked out with those guys because I consider myself, you know, a strong tight end. And I would always tease Pete and Keith about this. And they look at me and say, oh, all you want to do is lift weights. I'm like, hey, this is what I do, man. I like it. And unfortunately, you know, I was a blocking tight end, and, you know, when they did throw the ball to me, it was down at the goal line, and, you know, I was Jim's main man down there, and, hey, I took what Marv gave me. I appreciate it. Like I said, I'm here, I'm doing my thing, and I'm happy right now, and, you know, I'm glad, like I said, I can't say it enough. I'm happy to be a part of that team and that run that we had back then. We had a dynasty. You know, everybody who talks about that now, and the kids I'm at a school where we talk about football, and they look up the online and see the Bills. We had a dynasty. That's just far none. We had a good team, and, you know, for a long time. They didn't have the movement of the free agency, and everybody wasn't jumping from team to team like they're doing now. So everybody was there. We had depth in every position. And, you know, anybody could have went and played and been a starter on a team that doing those Super Bowl runs at the Bills.
You had 14 consecutive catches over 5 years, all went for touchdowns. And as you said, you were a blocking tight end, Butch. How much of that was just kind of catching the opponents off guard? And after a while, how could they not be looking for you down on the goal line, knowing your history down there?
That play, let me tell you, John, that play, we could have ran that every game, and I could have scored because it was always open. And I would tease Jim and go back to the sideline and tell Marv, listen, the role play is open. It's open. Trust me, we can score. And, you know, Marv didn't have their game plan, and I just know I'm looking at the blocking scheme, and when I'm looking at the defensive scheme, and I'm saying to myself, that play is open. I would go tell Jim sometime, listen, man, tell Marv to run the play. It's open. I can get open it. And they knew it was coming. I remember playing Phoenix one year, and Ted Marchibodi was the defensive coordinator, and he told our linebackers to look out for that play. He, you know, he drilled it all week, but sure enough, we ran it, and I caught the guy sleeping and scored. So it's a play that was always there. And, you know, that was my play. I guess they call it the ultimate role play. And, I'll take what they give me. And I was fun with it, you know. I had a fun time with it. We won. That's all that matters.
Yeah, the role play. That's right. That's a good way to look at it. What was it like the getting to the Super Bowl that first year, you know, 51-3 demolition of the Raiders here in Buffalo for the AFC Championship and being a part of that team that went to the Super Bowl? What was that like for you, Butch?
Oh, I loved it. I had fun. Fortunately, I had some Raider fans that were good friends of mine. That's nice. A couple of guys that are big Raider fans, and I remember going back to the game after the game, going back home, and he didn't want to talk to us. He was just so upset. And it was, you know, it was just one of those things. Like I said, John, that game was just unbelievable. Was, you know, to have the Raiders come in and we beat them so soundly, 51-3, and I wound up getting hurt that game, but, you know, we had already had the game in the bag, and it was just a fun time being a part of that and going down to the Super Bowl in Tampa where, you know, I'm from Florida, and I had my family was able to come up and see the game. It was a great experience for me, and, you know, a lot of guys playing the NFL and never get a chance to play in a Super Bowl. I was fortunate to play in two Super Bowls, and, you know, that's something that I always cherish, and I will always remember because that's part of my life. And, you know, and I was glad to be with the Bills during those times when that happened. So it was a great experience, trust me.
Butch, what do you think about – now, you talked about you being a bigger blocking tight end. Obviously, you had the streak of 14 consecutive touchdowns down at the goal line. You were a bigger blocking tight end. You love to lift weights. What do you think about the evolution of the tight end position and the evolution of offenses today? You have so many just athletic tight ends that are really being used in the passing game.
I love it. I watch these tight ends like, you know, Gronkowski, and the tight ends, the bigger tight ends, they're catching the balls more and they're involved more. I mean, Gronkowski is a good block, a great block as well, but they're giving them opportunity to catch the ball a lot more than it was back then. You know, we had a great running back in Thurman Thomas, and we had Kenny Davis that can come in and carry the load just as well. And, you know, these guys, like I said, in college, I blocked for Lorenzo White. I helped him get 2,000 yards as a blocking tight end at Michigan State, and George Perlis was big on running the ball. He came from that Pittsburgh Steelers offense, and he just, his mindset was just run and run and run. So I had developed that mentality of being a blocking tight end, and trust me, I get gratification out of blocking, knowing that I made a key block to spring the running back for a touchdown just as well as catching a pass. So I was fine with that. As long as we won, and at the end of the day, as you know, the score was in our favor, I didn't have a problem. But, you know, everybody wants to take, you know, want to catch passes. And that's just the nature of it, because that helps with the contracts and that helps with the future accolades and life. But, I mean, like I said, I take it as it came, and I just dealt with it and enjoyed the time.
On the line with Butch Rolle, former Bills tight end, who played in a couple of Super Bowls with the Buffalo Bills, coming back to Buffalo in a couple of weeks for his charity celebrity bowling tournament presented by the Butch Rolle Caring for Kids Foundation. Tell me about your foundation, Butch. What kind of work do you do?
Okay, this foundation, I developed this 4 years ago, John. It's a foundation where we're teaming up with Buffalo, organization in Buffalo called Packs and Purses. You know, they have, in media extensions, they give out backpacks or purses to homeless families and just people that's been displaced by fire, young mothers that's in need of transition, and just and also recovering addicts. And my foundation consists of pretty much the same realm, but in a lesser case, I've associated with a charter school down here where I give a scholarship every year to a senior that's been chosen by administration. So I present a scholarship, and also we have our youth at risk down here. We have events, like 3 or 4 events a year where we raise the money and the funds go to these charities so we can help these kids. And also, like I said, the kids for the scholarships where, you know, I was fortunate to get a scholarship, a full ride in college, but not everybody's fortunate to do that. So whatever we offer them, we give them money so they can help with their tuitions or their books or whatever it may be for their college funds. And that's what we're doing down here. And I've had the chance to sit down and establish this foundation 4 years ago. And it's, you know, we're building, we're new, and that's why I want to bring it to Buffalo, because this is like my second home, and I've been looking for an opportunity to get up there and really have that that feel of Buffalo and have them come and be part of my foundation, have the people come and have fun at a bowling event, which, you know, everybody loves the bowl. So they can bring their family, they can go and register online at the butchrollefoundation.org and just be part of it. So it's open to everybody.
And you were quite a bowler yourself, right, during your playing career? I seem to recall that.
Yeah, we like I said, Buffalo, you know, everybody loves the bowl, and we go out there. I don't have the technique of spinning the ball, so my thing is all power bowling. You know, I look at it like Fred Flintstone back in the days. I just throw the ball as hard as I can and pray that they all fall down.
So the details, this is coming up a couple of Saturdays away, right, on May 6th, the Butch Rolle Caring for Kids Foundation Bowling Tournament, right, at Airport Lanes in Cheektowaga, right?
Yes, it's AMS Airport Lanes. It's 3754 Genesee Street in Cheektowaga. And like I tell everybody who's interested, it's open to everybody. I'm going to be there. My former teammates are going to be there. And I'm praying that some of the current players are there as well so we can all have fun. And, you know, you go to the website, www.butchrollefoundation.org, and you click on the event tab, and you'll see the link for the bowling, and you just go and register. So it's that simple. And like I said, it goes for a great cause. It's a lot of food, bowling, and, you know, I'm getting a lot of people involved, and it's just a great time for a great cause for the area as well.
Butch, I think I'm going to have to come to that event. I do a little bowling myself, and so
Donald, come on, you, Donald, I'm expecting you and John to come there and be part of this, man. This is fun time, though. I want to see some things. I'm always asking people to show me that spin. I'm infatuated with that spin. When I see guys do that technique, I just want to learn and want to know how to do that so bad. So I'm sitting there having them show me how to hold my fingers and how to, you know, just to get that spin where I can see the ball seem like it's about to go off the gutter and all of a sudden just transform into the middle of the lane. So that's something that just odds me. So.
Can you do that, Donald?
I can definitely do that. But Butch, right, who on the team from when you were playing? Which one of those guys are very good?
I honestly don't know who's there, who can play, who's bowling. I haven't really seen anybody bowl that I can remember. And I know Carl Bond used to bowl, but he's in Alaska, so I don't think he's going to be in town. But there's other guys that are there, so I don't really know who's the ultimate bowler. But I will find out for sure.
So, sort
Donald,
through
here's
it.
The deal.
Yeah.
I have a question. You're going to have to show me how to use that spin, man. I'm banking on you to do that for me.
I can try.
Deal, man?
I can try to teach you. It's not an easy thing to do, you know.
I know.
Pros like me can get it done.
Oh.
Hey, Butch, what a great idea and what a great cause. We thank you for coming on the show today with us to talk about it, and we'll keep talking this up over the next couple of weeks or so.
John, I appreciate it. I appreciate it for having me, guys, and have a blessed day, man.
Thank you.
Stay warm.
Okay, we're good. Butch Roll, former Bills tight end, who had that incredible streak of touchdown catches, coming back to Buffalo in a couple of weeks. It is Saturday, May 6th, so just a couple of Saturdays away. It's at AMF Airport Lanes, Genesee Street in Cheektowaga. And if you need more information, you can go to butchrollfoundation.org to get more information on Butch Roll's celebrity charity golf or bowling tournament coming up at AMF Airport Lanes in just a couple of weeks. Our thanks to Butch for joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Returning in a moment, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Thanks again to Butch Roll for joining us, former Bills tight end, his celebrity charity bowling tournament coming up Saturday, May 6th, and we'll have more information on that coming up later in the show. And thanks to Joe Horgan, who joined us earlier today. Our Twitter poll today deals with the draft, and it's only a couple of weeks away now. And we want you to weigh in on this either via Twitter or on the phones. What would be the most surprising move the Bills could make in the first round of the NFL draft? What would be the most surprising thing they would do? Got 500 votes in on Twitter so far. And so far, 37% of you say trading up would be a shocker. I agree. Bills aren't trading up. I don't know that anybody's going to trade up. I certainly don't think the Bills are going to give up draft capital to move up. They only have 6 picks. 29% of you say draft a running back would shock you. 21% drafting a quarterback would shock you. 13% say if they don't draft a wide receiver or a defensive back in the first round, that would surprise you. Let us know what you think by a phone or by Twitter, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. There's an interesting question that comes in on Twitter from Robert Mashadonald. If Cardale Jones was coming out of college this year, where would he rate with this year's quarterback class? That's a really good question. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think?
For me, if Cardale Jones was coming out in this draft, I think he'd probably be a first-round pick. He might be better than the rest of these guys in this draft.
Really?
Like, he might be the first quarterback taken off the board. Reason being, you look at the production that he had at Ohio State the 1 year. Trubisky has 1 year of production, and he didn't take that team
anywhere near
right. where Cardale took Ohio State team. So you look at that and what he did there with that team, but then you look at his upside, you look at his body type and all of that stuff. We know that's what teams really fall in love with. So I think he'd probably be the first quarterback going off the board.
Oh, man, I got to ask Bucky Brooks about that.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's intriguing. First quarterback off the board.
Ahead of Watson, ahead of Mahomes, ahead of
all of them, Trubisky.
Yeah, he'd at least be in the first round, I'm sure of it, and I think he would be the first guy taken off the board, ahead of Watson because of how Watson is not that big. He's thrown a lot of interceptions, so teams do question that. Even though he played very good on the biggest stages against the best team, I just think that, you know, teams really draft based upon, you know, upside, and Cardale Jones has crazy upside, you know. And you look at what these quarterbacks right now are bringing, you know, Pat Mahomes, Kaiser, you look at Trubisky, you look at Watson. I mean, Cardale Jones, with his body size and the production he had in the 1 year, I think he'd be the first guy taken.
We're going to ask our next guest about that. Bucky Brooks is going to join us after the top of the hour to talk about the draft. He's got a mock draft up. He's a former Bills receiver, former second-round pick of the Buffalo Bills. Bucky Brooks has gone on to his second career as a draft analyst and an expert on the draft for NFL Network, and he's standing by to join us when we return. You can either phone in or tweet in your questions for Bucky Brooks when he joins us in a minute or two, and that's coming up, so stick around for that. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network Sports.
Update from One Bills Drive on this Friday afternoon. NFL news, the director of officiating, Dean Blandino, is leaving the league. He reportedly has a television job lined up, not quite sure which network yet. Blandino has been the NFL's vice president of officiating since 2013, overseeing several changes in the way the game has been officiated, including changes made based on personal safety. He's 45 years old. Blandino was in place to head up the league's new centralized replay review system, but he is leaving the NFL, leaving in the next couple of weeks or so. NFL mourning the loss of Pittsburgh Steelers chairman Dan Rooney, one of the league's most influential and popular executives. He died yesterday. He was 84 years old. Rooney took over the operation of the Steelers franchise in the 1960s from his father, Art, who founded the Steelers. He oversaw six NFL championships for a team that had never before played in a championship game. Around the league, cornerback Jason McCourty, the Tennessee Titans' most senior player, announced yesterday that he's being released by the team. Titans drafted him in the sixth round in 2009. McCourty was due a base salary of $7 million in the final year of his deal. The Lions, the general manager of the Lions, says they're in the early stages of contract extension talks with quarterback Matt Stafford. Stafford is headed into the final year of a five-year contract he signed in 2013. Bob Quinn, the Lions GM, said it's not done yet. We're in the early stages. Quinn also let the cat out of the bag as far as let the cat out of the bag as far as the release of the schedule. Team president Rod Wood says the NFL schedule is going to be released next Thursday. Schedule coming out next Thursday. The preseason schedule came out this past week. And the Bisons are on the road for the first time this year in Scranton-Wilkes-Barre for a three-game set. Buffalo went 5-2 in its season-opening homestand. They lost yesterday in extra innings to Rochester. Right-hander Matt Latos gets the start tonight for the Herd. It's a 6:35 first pitch. The Bisons on the road in Scranton-Wilkes-Barre. And that is the update. Update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones, coming to you live from One Bills Drive. We're going to talk with Bucky Brooks in a moment or two. He's the former Bills wide receiver who is an NFL Network analyst. He's got a mock draft out there. He's got a lot of thoughts on the draft. We'll get his thoughts about the Bills and their draft. In the meantime, our Twitter poll is up. We want to hear from you. What would surprise you that the Bills might do in the first round? What would be the most surprising thing the Bills could make in the first round of the draft a couple of weeks away? Got more than 530 votes in. 38% of you say a trade-up. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense, does it? 37% say a trade-up would surprise you. 29% say if the Bills draft a running back, that would shock you. 21% say if the Bills draft a quarterback, that would be surprising. 13% say if they don't draft a wide receiver or defensive back in the first round, that would surprise you. Donald, right now I'm ruling out a trade-up. I'm ready to rule out a quarterback first-round pick. Are you, Donald?
Yeah, I'm definitely ruling out a trade-up. I mean, I'm totally ruling that out. Drafting a quarterback, that would shock me. It would definitely shock me. I don't think that's going to happen. So, yeah, I'll rule that out as well. And even drafting a running back.
I would rule that out.
Yeah, I'm going to rule that out as well. Not drafting a wide receiver or DB, you know, I go with the people. That's like the least shocking to me just because, obviously, you still need linebackers and you still could probably go with like a right tackle or something like that,
yeah.
You know, so that wouldn't shock me if they didn't go with wide receiver or DB as much as if they traded up or,
yeah,
you know, drafted a quarterback or something like that.
And you could make perfect sense out of a linebacker coming in in the first round. You can make a good sense out of an offensive lineman if there's a really good one available, right?
Yep. I mean, those are positions, especially at the right tackle position. It's something where we don't know what's going to happen there at the right tackle. It's going to be a competition. We'll see how that plays out once we, you know, get through the draft and get into mini camps and training camp. But linebacker, we know is a need on this team. We've heard Coach McDermott say who he feels are the starters right now. So we'll see how that plays out as well. But it's a need. I think they're going to they might address that pretty high. Like, they might end up going at linebacker in the first round. If a guy like Reuben Foster is still there, they might go ahead and take that guy. Coach McDermott, being a defensive guy, might decide, you know what, I can get DBs deeper in the draft. I can get receivers deeper in the draft. I'm going to go ahead and go with the linebacker right now because Reuben Foster is the best linebacker in this draft if he's still there. So that wouldn't shock me at all.
How surprised would you be if there's an offensive tackle, not a guard, not a center, but an offensive tackle who just is sitting out there waiting to be picked by the Bills, Cam Robinson maybe, somebody like that? The Bills went that direction first round. That's justifiable anyway. It's surprising, but justifiable.
It's definitely justifiable. Like you said, it would be surprising, though. Now, this we all know that, well – the right tackle position, I guess we got to figure out what's going to happen there. We don't know what's going to happen there with Cyrus and whoever else is going to compete. We know Chantrell is going to be, suspended. And so, you know, Cyrus, hopefully he can get back from his hip. But you can definitely justify a right tackle coming here because there's a need there.
Yeah.
There's a need for a solid right tackle. And we know that even Cyrus is better on the left side than the right side. So how comfortable are the coaches with putting him on the right side? Now, obviously, you don't want to just rule out Jordan Mills. He's there as well, so he's going to have to be in that competition, that conversation. But if you have a guy who you can say, you know what, we can take this guy right now, go ahead and plug him in, and our offensive line is set for this year.
All right, let's talk about the draft. Let's talk about it with our next guest. He is an NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at Bucky Brooks. Bills second-round draft pick in 1994, former NFL wide receiver Bucky Brooks right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with us. Bucky, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones. Thanks very much for coming by here today. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
You guys, you have your mock draft up there, and you have the Bills mock to wide receiver Mike Williams, Clemson, in the first round at number 10. Tell me about that player, and tell me why you think he's the right pick for the Buffalo Bills, Bucky.
I think in terms of the player, I think the player is outstanding. He's the natural number one receiver. He's a big body playmaker, a guy that kind of plays the game in a style that is reminiscent of Dez Bryant. He understands how to work in between the hashes, and when you look at the Buffalo Bills, Sammy Watkins is clearly established as the number one receiver, but he's more of a vertical playmaker. At some point, they need to find someone who can do the dirty work. That is the best way to kind of maximize the protection from the quarterback. So that's kind of where I had in mock it.
You have Mike Williams ahead of Corey Davis in your mock draft. Is that the way you view their ability, their skill set?
Yeah, I think two players are better than Corey Davis. I would say Mike Williams and John Ross over Corey Davis. Corey Davis is a good player, but here's what I would caution people in terms of getting fired up about him. He played in the MAC conference, and no disrespect to those who played in the MAC, but when you look at the other two guys did it against more guys that are going to play in the league, particularly Mike Williams. He dominated in the playoffs against Ohio State and Alabama. At no point in any game did we see Corey Davis really dominate against elite competition. In my estimation, that matters, and I think that should be factored into the evaluation.
Now, John Ross, obviously, he played out at Washington. He's played against guys that are going to be in this league. But does the size, does the injuries, any of that stuff bother you?
Well, I mean, all of those guys have injuries that you have to worry about. Corey Davis is coming off surgery on an ankle. Mike Williams had a neck injury that prevented him from playing a season ago. John Ross has had some lower body injuries. So none of those guys are necessarily clean from a medical standpoint. With John Ross, the thing that stands out to me, everyone talks about the 40 time and the speed is real. You feel the speed on tape, but he's a rare route runner that can stop and run intermediate things as well as the vertical routes. I've compared him multiple occasions to T.Y. Hilton and his ability to come in maybe as a number two receiver and grow into the role of a number one. The other two guys, Mike Williams and Corey Davis, neither one of those guys are speed merchants. It depends on what you're looking for at that position because those are more of the chain movers where he is more of the home run hitter who also can offer you the ability to be a more traditional wide receiver on the outside.
On the line with Bucky Brooks from the NFL Network. You can see him all week on NFL Network's Path to the Draft, 6 p.m. on NFL Network. Hey, Bucky, in your mock draft, which came out earlier this week, you have four quarterbacks in the first round. Can you rank them for us and tell us how you see those four fitting into the league?
Well, I think it's the difference between mock drafts and what a true evaluation is. Mock drafts are more for fans. It's more trying to connect the dots. It's not always necessarily in order of your opinion. If I had to rank the quarterbacks, I would rank Deshaun Watson one. I would still say that Deshaun Kaiser is two, Mr. Trubisky three, Davis Webb and Pat Mahomes can be four and five. The big thing when you're looking at the quarterback position with Deshaun Watson is the most experienced of all those guys. He has won on the bigger and brighter stage. In those big games, he has been the best player on the field. And I think there's something to be said for that. Mitchell Trubisky is a pure pocket passer. He has all the talent to be eventually a franchise quarterback, but he's only played in 13 college games. And to me, there's something about his inability to win that job from Marquise Williams for two seasons that kind of stands out to me. I think there's something to be said for that. And it's going to be a hard transition when you've only had that little experience before you take over the big role in the next level.
Bucky, so with you talking about Trubisky and his, you know, his inexperience only playing in the 1 year, everybody's now talking about the Browns possibly, or they're torn indoors between, or internally between, you know, taking Myles Garrett or taking Trubisky. So what do you think? What's going to happen at the number one pick?
I mean, I think that's just conjecture. I think they're trying to drum up some interest to possibly trade out of the spot. I don't think it's close between Myles Garrett and Mitch Trubisky. And I'm not saying that Myles Garrett is like an out-of-world player, someone that we've never seen in his lifetime. He's a really good player. He's a great athlete. He has production as a sack artist. And so when guys check off the box, character, athleticism, production, you typically have to take them at the top of the board. That's why I think he'll kind of get the nod over Trubisky, even though there is some fascination in that building over Trubisky possibly being a franchise quarterback.
We know, Bucky, quarterbacks are typically, you know, overrated when it comes to the draft. How many of these quarterbacks are difference makers, potential franchise quarterbacks for whatever teams wind up with them this year?
Well, I mean, I don't know if any of those guys are necessarily like surefire can misses as franchise quarterbacks. I mean, in the league, we only have five or six real franchise quarterbacks. Everybody else is a good player that needs a supporting cast. I think these guys are much into that second category. If you surround them with the right pieces, if you put them in a system that kind of meets them halfway based on what they're coming out of in college versus what they're going into as pros, they can have success. But I think the league is eventually trending away from like, oh, the quarterback is doing everything, and more into all of the pieces of the puzzle have to fit. You have to play complementary ball to win at the highest level. These guys can manage games and do those things. I just don't know if any one of them can carry the entire weight of reversing the fortunes of a franchise on the strength of their right arm.
Which one of, I guess, the second wave, we know the top four guys that everybody talks about, but which one of the second wave of quarterbacks and Davis Webb and Peterman out of Pitt, you know, which one of those guys can emerge as maybe a franchise quarterback in your opinion?
I think Joshua Dobbs has an opportunity to kind of mirror what Dak Prescott did in Dallas. Not saying that he can play to that level, but I think when you look at the traits, they have similar traits. Highly intelligent, very articulate, natural leader, has terrific athleticism and arm talent. He is someone that can kind of come out of the mid-round tier to be a solid player. I also would kind of lean on Brad Kaya. Brad Kaya, to me, strikes me as a Kirk Cousins-type player, meaning that if he has the weapons around him that don't necessarily put too much on him where he has to carry the team, he can be a very, very effective player and play the game in a fashion where he can lead his team to a lot of wins.
On the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with Bucky Brooks from NFL Network, we had somebody tweet in, Bucky, this question. I want to throw it at you. Cardale Jones, Bills fourth rounder a year ago out of Ohio State. Where would he fit into this year's quarterback class? How would he stack up against, you know, the top quarterbacks this year?
I think that's a good question. I think he and Pat Mahomes are very, very similar in terms of their arm talent. Big arms, but you have question marks about their ability to kind of play the game in a controlled manner. I think he would be probably a borderline first, second-round talent. I think he would fit somewhere in that category with Mahomes and Davis Webb.
Hey, Buck, let me ask you before we let you go about defensive backs. The Bills have a need for defensive backs, and based on your mock draft, there are a couple here, including Marshawn Lattimore from Ohio State, who you have highly ranked. Can you talk about him for a second and maybe compare him to Humphrey from Alabama?
I mean, Marshawn Lattimore is well-received. Like, he's highly regarded just because of his athleticism. very natural athlete, smooth and fluid, has all the movement skills that you look for at the position. The one problem with Marshawn Lattimore is he has only played one full season. Two of the seasons that he played at Ohio State were kind of cut short or affected by hamstring issues. So he has a durability issue that you have to worry about. When he plays, he's effective. But those same hamstring injuries also popped up again at the combine. So you have a bit of a question mark on whether he's going to be a durable player if you take him that high. Marlon Humphrey is a solid player, solid blue-chip player out of Alabama, smart, physical, tough. His biggest issue are ball skills. Can he play the ball down the field? He gave up some big plays, and he lost a handful of 50-50 balls. Very good player, has to work on that aspect, but he can come in and be a plug-and-play player.
Marlon, a question I have for you away from this draft. I saw you retweet something, and NFL Research actually tweeted this out. You retweeted it, and it said, you know, 15 defensive players selected number one overall in common era draft since 1967. What does that say to this game? Is this, like, really just an offensive game now?
Oh, yeah, it's been an offensive game, but the rules have made it where it's an offensive game. To drum up interest from fans, they've made it really about the quarterback and throwing the ball all over the yard. And so, yeah, it's an offensive game. But to win the championship, you have to be very, very good on defense. And the way that you draft and select people is all about the passing game. So it's either quarterback, left tackles, pass rushers, or corners. Those are the marquee positions on the field when it comes to draft currency. Because of that, you see people typically expand top picks on one of those four positions. And more times than not, it's the quarterback that goes first, or one of those auxiliary positions coming after that.
I know you think highly of Cam Robinson, the offensive lineman from Alabama. He belongs among one of the top offensive players, I would think, in this draft. Is that right, Bucky?
I mean, he's one of the top offensive tackles. I don't know if you would put him as a top 15 player because he's been a little inconsistent at Alabama. If he's asked to do what he is good at, which is block the run, play on the edges, and maybe move to right tackle, he's ideal for that. But if you're thinking that you're going to get a franchise left tackle, that's not necessarily what he's built for. He will have some trouble with the elite speed rushes that come off that backside. His best bet is to play right tackle for a team that prefers to run it more so than pass it.
Hmm. Last thing, Bucky, is there one can't-miss surefire prospect in this draft that whatever team gets him is going to be happy with him?
Jamal Adams from LSU is the best prospect in the draft. He checks off all the boxes. Athleticism, character, production, natural leadership skills. He is what we call a temperature leader, meaning when he steps in the room, he changes the temperature of the room. He is a positive leader. I believe he is the best prospect in the draft. He is someone that people get excited about when they see him.
Now, I believe you said you feel like O.J. Howard is a can't-miss product or project coming out of college as well. Is that right?
I mean, all those guys, like both of those guys are solid. They're kind of kissing cousins when it comes to what they bring to the table. O.J. Howard is rock solid in terms of his ability to run routes, make plays, block on the edge. Character is exemplary. I mean, you can't miss with those guys. Like those guys, you may not hit a home run, but you're definitely going to hit a double or a triple.
All right.
Double or triple. I'll take a double or a triple.
Me too. Hey, Bucky, thanks for this. Keep up the good work, and thanks for being with us here today for a couple of minutes.
All right, thanks so much for having me on.
Okay, Bucky Brooks, NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter, at Bucky Brooks. He's on NFL Network all week on their Path to the Draft, 6 p.m. on NFL Network. His mock draft, he has Myles Garrett going one overall to Cleveland. Jamal Adams, he has number two, the LSU safety going to San Francisco.
Hmm.
I think that'd be a surprise to many, but you just heard Bucky Brooks say he is the number one prospect in the draft.
And I've heard a lot of people say he is the number one, you know, prospect in the draft, so it wouldn't really shock me if he ended up going that high. I guess it always, and we know, teams will draft based on their need. Obviously, if you're picking at number two, if you didn't have, you know, Myles Garrett is gone, you have your choice of everybody, you know. So do you go with Solomon Thomas or do you end up going with Jamal Adams? I mean, you have your pick, and the 49ers, hopefully they make the right pick. They haven't made the right pick in a little while.
It's just, and you said this, I believe, yesterday, it's just a safety that high. You know, how much impact does a safety have, you know, on the game? Now, Bucky Brooks talked about Jamal Adams a minute ago and said, you know, what do you say? He raises the temperature of the room when he walks in.
Yeah.
I get that. I can think over my lifetime, though, how many impact safeties have there been like that? Maybe two or three, let's say, in the last 30 years in the NFL anyway. Guys who are difference makers on the back end of the defense, you know, that make a difference on a consistent basis. I don't know. With a premium blue chip draft pick, like two overall. I don't know, drafting a safety
right.
there.
Right. You know, for me, you need to draft – if it's going to be a safety, you need to have a guy like a Micah Hyde, a guy who can come down and cover in the nickel, a guy who can go out wide and cover one of those top receivers as well. You know, if you want to draft a safety that high, you need a guy who's versatile, a guy who can also maybe help you out in the punt return game. Jamal Adams, obviously he's the best player or prospect coming out of this draft at the safety position. But can he go out there and play all of those other positions? For me, to take a safety that high, you need to have a guy who can do multiple things.
Bucky Brooks, just off the phone with us, likes Marshon Lattimore, the Ohio State cornerback, a lot more than he likes Marlon Humphrey of Alabama. In fact, Humphrey's not in his first round, I don't think. You're on the other side of that equation.
I'm on the other side.
Tell me why.
With Marlon Humphrey, because of how he likes to play the game, because he doesn't, you know, his technique is not as sound as a Marlon Humphrey. He's not as physical as a Marlon Humphrey. He likes to allow guys to get off the line of scrimmage because he is so fast and he believes he can catch up, you know. But even Bucky Brooks talked about his hamstrings are an issue. He's had surgery on his hamstrings, and it creeped back up on him at the combine, you know. So that's something that you really have to worry about when you talk about taking a guy that high. Do you want a guy who's had surgery on his hamstrings and it's creeping up at the combine? We're not even talking about in a game. It creeped up at the combine, you know. So I don't know. I'd just rather go with Marlon Humphrey, a guy who played in that Alabama defense, a smart guy, knows how to play zone, knows how to play man-to-man, but also is very physical in playing the ball. He obviously needs to work on his ball skills, but he also is very physical in coming downhill and playing against the run. And for me, and I think, you know, Coach McDermott likes this well in his corners, he wants guys who will help out in the run game.
We're going to go through some of these mock drafts in a couple of minutes here on the show. Right now we're talking about Bucky Brooks' mock draft, which was posted on NFL.com, and he talks about it every day on NFL Network. First quarterback off his board, Deshaun Watson, Clemson quarterback, goes to the Jets. And he talked about why Watson ahead of the others. I get that, and I think that big play ability in a kind of a mediocre quarterback class, I guess that's as good a reason as anybody to select one ahead of the other. The others have issues, right? I mean, Mahomes, has never really played in anything resembling an NFL-style offense, right? And you got Trubisky, who's only got the one season as a starter. Watson has the experience and the big game experience. Kizer, I think, is on the next rung. I get why many people, including Bucky Brooks, would make Deshaun Watson the first quarterback off the board.
I think if you have quarterbacks that, everybody talks about Trubisky and him having the arm strength and him having, you know, it seems like he's the most pro-ready, but he's only played in 1 year. So there's you have to ask yourself, okay, why did he get beat out the other years he was at North Carolina? There's a reason for that. He wasn't like a three-year starter or something like that. Deshaun Watson is a guy who, for me, they all have issues. Every one of these quarterbacks have issues. So if you have a guy that has issues but he's played very well in the biggest games and against the best defense in all of college football, I think that really says something. You know, the fact that he can rise and really elevate his game late in those games against the best defense really says something to him personally and, you know, his heart playing this game.
We're going to talk about some of these mock drafts in a moment. You know who very rarely is linked to the Buffalo Bills, which, you know, we have our Twitter poll up right now about who would be shocking. We didn't put linebacker up there. We talked about it briefly a minute ago. Mm-hmm. Reuben Foster, in many respects, I think, is a guy who might fit here with the Buffalo Bills. Not talked about much when you get to these mock drafts. Bills haven't said much about him.
Yeah.
They are very big here. Doug Whaley's tenure at draft smoke screens and disguising their intentions, maybe giving you a head fake as to what their intentions might be. I would not be shocked if Reuben Foster comes off the board to the Bills at 10 overall.
I remember watching that national championship game and saying, like, Reuben Foster is all over the field.
Yeah,
like,
we talked about him here
on the
show.
Yeah, like, this dude was just all over the field, flying around, making big hit after big hit, sideline to sideline, coming downhill, making hits on running backs behind the line of scrimmage, you know, trying to take the head off of the quarterback. Like, he was really all over the field. And for me, and when you think about Coach McDermott and you think about Coach Doug Whaley, and it seems like, you know, he likes linebackers. You look at Coach McDermott, he wants to be able to get pressure up front, and he wants to have solid linebackers who can run sideline to sideline. You look at what he had down there in Carolina. He had guys that could come downhill, but guys that can also go sideline to sideline. Obviously, you need to have good corners and good safeties on the back end, but I think he prefers to have a very, very solid front end of his defense, and that can really compensate for the back end that might not necessarily be as strong right away.
And there's a pretty obvious football temperament that shows up on the video on Reuben Foster.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's pretty clear. And, you know, obviously we watch highlights. We don't watch every play. But it's pretty clear. Even if you just watch the national championship game, this guy is a difference maker, plays at a very, very high level, has a high motor, as they say, and makes a difference at his linebacker spot. And, look, we said this. I think we talked about this earlier this week. Given his background, Coach McDermott's background on the defensive side of the ball, given the fact that the Bills 19th in defense last year, got to get better,
yeah.
I'd be stunned if their first pick in the draft was not on that side of the ball. Cornerback, linebacker, maybe a safety, but I'd be stunned if they didn't go defense first round.
I'd be stunned as well, you know. And you can go at linebacker, you can go cornerback, or you can go safety. You can go either one of those positions. For me, it makes sense to go on the defensive side of the ball. And I don't care what position on the defense, because we need depth at all of those positions. But I do know that Reuben Foster really is a game changer at that linebacker position. And he's a guy, when he comes downhill and he hits, like, he runs through you, you know. And we know that last year there was a real issue with tackling on this team. And in front end, in the back end, like, nobody wanted to tackle. And I don't think that Coach McDermott is going to have that on his defense. And so when you draft a guy, that's why I talk about a guy like Marlon Humphrey, who will come down and really hit you in the running game. If it's going to be a linebacker, it's going to be a linebacker like Reuben Foster that runs straight through you.
All right, we're going to review. We do this once a week now leading up to the draft, meaning we'll do it again next week and probably the week after that. We review the mock drafts. Who do people have assigned to the Buffalo Bills in that first round? We'll talk about some of that. We're less than 2 weeks away from round one of the draft. So it is draft time now and draft time on our show. So come on back for that. Bucky Brooks joined us. We thank him for joining us. He was with us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. Donald and I back with more draft talk when we return the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. We're live at One Bills Drive with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Talking about the news of the day, a couple of weeks from the draft. We're going to talk about quarterbacks coming up in the 2 o'clock hour with a guy who deals with quarterbacks. In fact, Jeff Christensen worked with Cardale Jones this past offseason. He's a quarterback whisperer, a quarterback guru.
Man.
What do you think?
Like, I wish I could get that title. Quarterback whisperer.
Yeah.
Whisperer.
You wonder, I've always been fascinated about how those guys kind of mesh with the actual quarterback coach. What they're telling Cardale, for instance, and what Cardale gets from his Bills coaches.
Yeah, I'm sure it's probably not a good mesh, I would think. I know down at the high school level, because parents are now paying, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars for their kids to be trained at the high school level. And I know a lot of coaches that don't like it, because – you go to this quarterback coach or you go to this wide receiver coach, and this person is teaching you totally different than what I'm trying to teach you. And I know down at that level, to a certain extent, coaches are still supposed to be teaching and still supposed to be really trying to get you to understand the position. And those coaches don't like when parents and players go out and get their own training, you know. So I would think it's the same thing on this level, because that's not how I taught you to drop back. That's not how we do it in this offense. But now you go to this guy and you get used to doing this, and you come back and you're totally doing something totally different than what I'm trying to teach you to do here. I wouldn't think it's a good mesh.
I don't either. I think it would almost open up, especially with the long off season, with the inability of coaches to get with their players for a long time until April. I would think it would open up maybe different voices in a quarterback's head, or anybody's head for that matter.
I wonder if an offensive coordinator would send a quarterback to a certain guy, like, you know, refer a guy to his player, you know, like, I want you to go and work with this guy in the offseason because I know him, I know how he likes to train, I know how he likes to teach his players, and we're on the same page. That might work. Yeah.
Our Twitter poll today deals with the Bills and their draft strategy. We want to hear from you about this. What would be the most surprising move the Bills could make regarding their first round pick in a couple of weeks? We've got 1,400 votes in so far. 32% of you say you'd be shocked, I tell you, if the Bills traded up. 26% say you'd be surprised if they drafted a quarterback. 25% say you'd be shocked if they drafted a running back, and 17% say you'd be surprised if they did not draft a wide receiver or defensive back. It's pretty close.
Seems like it's getting closer.
Yeah, for some reason it's getting closer. We have a couple of Twitter responses on this as well. Aiden tweets in, if they draft a running back in the first round, I will ditch the team and cheer for the Lions.
Well, the Lions have new, nice uniforms.
Yeah,
so
maybe that's the
reason to
do
that. It gives you something to cheer about.
Yeah. Joey Newman, you left out make a smart decision in the poll choices. No, he didn't. I think we assume it's going to be a smart decision.
Yeah.
A couple of other tweets. I don't get some of these. Justin Ebright, if I were Buffalo, I'd actually be taking calls to trade down and nab a few extra picks. So would I. How many of those calls do you think are coming in?
I don't think there's many. Yeah, I don't think there's many coming in.
So. To be honest, that's what I believe this week's news about the quarterbacks and the Bills' interest in quarterbacks is all about, in an attempt to entice somebody to make a call. Say, we want number 10. Buffalo, yep, we'll give you extra picks. Don't you? I mean, I'd still believe that was the main reason behind the picture with Trubisky's workout and the news about Kaiser's workout. I think that's what this is all about.
That picture with Trubisky was Photoshopped. It's not really Terry. It's like, if you look at it, his body is totally different than his face. And you look at him in person, it's like, wait, that – no, I'm just playing. Even with the Browns and all of this stuff, even Bucky Brooks talked about it today. He feels like that's all smokescreen, you know, so that they can entice somebody to try to trade up and take it so that they can get out of that number one spot. It seems like if that's the truth, they're just trying to stockpile picks for – I mean, I don't know what's going on out there in Cleveland. You still have to pick somebody. You know, you can't just trade out and try to just stack up pick and not take anybody. So the Bills, if they were to trade back, it would make sense. With only six picks, you need to pick up more picks.
They would love to.
Because we know you build the foundation of your team through the draft, you know. And with this being a deep draft, that means you can get some players later in the draft, you know. So if you can trade back and possibly pick up maybe another fifth rounder or another, you know, mid, like third, or even a fourth rounder, I mean, that's huge for this team.
Got to find somebody to trade with, too. Jeremy Abbott tweets in, the Bills need more draft picks, in my opinion. Can they move back in the draft and still get a difference maker in the first round? Yeah, I think they can. You know, I was thinking about this. Difference maker, I don't know if that's the way to describe it. I think they need at least a starter or two out of this draft.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly your first two picks are going to be the starters that you need to get, right?
You would think
corner,
they're going to be the starters.
Wide receiver.
You hope they're
offensive
the starters.
Offensive lineman. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You hope your first and second round, maybe even your third round pick, are starters, right, coming off the back, especially if you go on the defensive side of the ball where there are so many holes on the defense. I would think that, man, you need that guy to be a starter, first, second, and possibly even your third rounder. Everybody else behind that, you're hoping that they can be players. And sometimes they are players, you know. A lot of times they are players, and they end up eventually becoming starters. But that first, second, third round guy, you need those guys to come in and play right away, help this team out right away.
Let us know what you think. That's our Twitter poll. What would be the biggest surprise for the Bills in the first round of the draft in a couple of weeks? You can ring us up at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550, or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Donald, we are a couple of weeks away from the first round of the draft, and it's time for our mock draft review. We take a look at what they're predicting for the Buffalo Bills, some of the experts. Just got off the phone with Bucky Brooks, a bona fide expert. Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network. His mock draft, he has LSU safety Jamal Adams going to the Bills in the first round.
Wow.
We spent a lot of time talking about Jamal Adams a minute ago. I think all of us would be pretty satisfied with that, although safety, I don't know, that's a little bit early, I think. But Jamal Adams certainly, you know, Bucky Brooks just called him the best prospect in the draft, I think, right?
Yeah, and there's, like, not one consensus – like one person that everybody's saying is going to end up at the Bills. It's like all over the board. Jamal Adams, I don't think he's going to be there. Like, I don't think that he will end up lasting, especially when you hear Bucky Brooks say he's the best player in the draft. I don't think he's going to last to number 10, you know. If he goes, maybe Malik Hooker is still there, or vice versa. Maybe, you know, a team falls in love with Malik Hooker and they take him and Jamal Adams is still there. I see it the other way around, though. I don't think he's going to be there at number 10.
Jamal Adams, boy, if he goes 2 like Bucky Brooks has him, or even if he's there at 10 and goes in the top 10, he better be a really good player, Donald, because as I said a few minutes ago, he's a safety.
He is a safety. And we haven't really seen, you know, even when I described him yesterday, the passing game is not his strong suit. Like, he is very – now, obviously, he can drop back. He can catch interceptions. But you're not going to say, all right, we need you to go down as a strong safety and cover somebody. Or we need you to – and I feel like if you're going in the top 10, you need to be able to do that. You need to be able to cover guys in the passing game. With that not being his strong suit, whew, I just can't really justify taking him that high. I get that everybody thinks he's the best player in this draft. I get that, you know, his dad was a first-round pick to the Giants back in 84. I get that, you know, like Bucky Brooks said, when he comes in the room, he lights up the room. Yeah, the temperature goes up. He lights up the room. I get all of that. But guess what? That doesn't matter once you get on the field. You need a guy that can obviously be a very good player and what he does, but if you at the safety position, a position that typically doesn't go that high, I need him to be able to help out in the passing game as well.
Our mock draft roundup, as we go through some of the top draft analysts, some of the draft experts, that was Daniel Jeremiah. Todd McShay, ESPN. Todd McShay mocks Reuben Foster to the Bills with the 10th overall pick. Reuben Foster, I confess, he's my flavor of the day, Donald. I'll probably change in the next 2 weeks, but right now I would love to see Reuben Foster come to the Bills in the first round.
Are you like Baskin Robbins?
Yeah. Well, we got about 2 weeks left. I'll have 13 more flavors until the draft. No, I really like Reuben Foster and see how he might fit here in a big way and help out this Buffalo defense.
I want to see how many Alabama players go in the first round. Like, over-under. I don't know where to even set the over-under. I think it's going to end up being like 8 Alabama first players round. In the first round. Like, they have linebackers, they have offensive linemen, defensive linemen, cornerbacks. Like, it's crazy how much talent that they have out down there at Alabama every year, really.
I bet there's five.
Five? You think
five?
First
round, yeah. I'm just top of my head.
Reuben Foster is –
he'll be one of them.
Yeah, he's definitely going to be one of them. I don't know where he's going to go, you know, because people talk about his character issues. He has probably top 10 talent. But does the character issues make him drop back to the teens or maybe even into the 20s? I don't know. If a team gets him all the way back in the 20s, it's a steal. Because when you watch that kid fly all over the field and when you watch him hit people, whew, I wouldn't even want to be hit by him. I wouldn't. Like, the dude just runs through you when he's making tackles. And it's not even like he's just throwing his body. Like, he will wrap you up and make a sure tackle, you know, and make that sure tackle look like he just dove his body at you. It's amazing to watch him play.
What's the character issue aside from the incident at the combine? Is there anything serious about him that
I haven't read up? I just hear everybody say he has character issues when
right.
they talk about him. And
I
don't
know.
I hope they're not talking about just that one incident
that
at
was
the combine.
Relatively minor, I think, right?
It was.
Left the combine early, okay. Had a spat with a nurse or some sort of
yeah.
medical assistant at the hospital in Indy. Okay. You know,
like, hey,
worth noting.
I gotta draw your blood from this vein. No. No, use this arm. Just going back
I guess
back
I'd
and
like
forth.
To know more about the so-called character issues.
Yeah, I got to read up more on his character, too. Maybe he's had some trouble down at Alabama with whatever it was down there, but I hope it's not just that one incident, and now everybody's questioning his character because that was one incident.
Todd McShay has Reuben Foster coming to the Bills in the first round. Just a couple of weeks ago, a month or so ago, Nick Saban came to his defense, called Reuben Foster a great leader, who he said, I wish he would have responded in a more positive way. But Nick Saban said, we've never had any issues with Reuben. If anybody here asked someone 8 or 10 times, he says, he's been a great player for us here. I don't know.
So what are we talking about?
I don't know what we're talking about.
That one incident? If that's the one incident, then we need to hear more about that. You know, like mm-hmm. what really happened in the hospital at the combine, because – if his coach is saying we've never had any issues with him, and nobody's really come out and said what his issues were at Alabama, like, I've never heard he failed the drug test or anything like that. I'm sure I'm going to get a tweet on this. You know how people sit out there and they wait. And I hope I do. Like, somebody tweet me and tell me what his character issues are, because all I've heard of is the issues at the combine. Yeah, at the hospital.
A verbal altercation, right?
Right.
Okay. Anyway, that's Todd McShay. He has the Bills getting Reuben Foster. It is our mock draft roundup. Mel Kiper Jr., ESPN. He has the Bills going with the guy who I'm sure will be a popular pick with many, O.J. Howard, another Alabama guy, the tight end from Alabama, going to the Bills at number 10 overall. Wouldn't rule it out, Donald. And it doesn't hit an area of need for the Bills, but, you know, there have been a lot of positive, glowing things said about O.J. Howard in the last couple of weeks, some of them right here on this show.
That's another one of those positions that everybody says, like, do you take a tight end that high? Like, that guy really – you have to be sure that he's a real playmaker and a difference maker on your offense, not just, you know, in the next this upcoming season, but years to come when you take a tight end at the number 10 position, at the number 10 spot in the draft. But when you watch him on film, I mean, the dude can catch. You know, he can run, he can catch. He can catch the ball down the field. Obviously, you can use him in the red zone because he's bigger, he's taller, he can jump up above guys. He looks like a basketball player. So hopefully he can come into this league and really be that guy. For me, once he gets to this league, he's going to see a lot more man coverage. And he hasn't played against man-to-man coverage in college that often. He played against a lot more zone where you see him just running through the zone, finding the open spot. You know, in the running game, he's good in the running game. And that's a plus for a guy coming out of college that everybody talks about how athletic he is and how he can catch the ball down in the field. He really can help out in the running game. So that's a plus. I just need to see him go against more one-on-one men.
Working through our mock draft roundup, another Alabama guy mocked to the Bills, Gordon McInnes of Pro Football Focus, right, analytics guy. Gordon McInnes says the Bills going with Jonathan Allen, the Alabama defensive lineman, defensive tackle, really, I believe,
that would shock me.
That would surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, we should have put that up in our Twitter poll. That would
D-line.
D-line at the number one. That would really surprise me for that. I understand that Kyle is getting up there in age, and we don't know how much longer he's going to play, maybe one, maybe two more seasons, if that. But it would really shock me if they decided to go D-line in this draft. Maybe next year's draft, but not this draft, when you have so many other positions that really have holes that you need to fill, and you only have six picks. That would really shock me.
Pete Prisco from CBSSports.com. His mock draft has the Bills going with Mitchell Trubisky, the North Carolina quarterback. Pete Prisco apparently swayed by the picture that was put up on social media the other day. I don't see that happening at all.
I think he's looking at the big picture and looking at Tyrod's contract and how the Bills can get out of it. The fact that they're in that picture, you know, I think he's looking at everything combined and saying, I think the Bills might take a quarterback. And so I feel like that's why he's saying Mitchell Trubisky.
And finally, and we just talked to Bucky Brooks. He has the Bills going with Mike Williams. He likes Mike Williams a lot.
He does.
And really the first guy, Bucky Brooks was a minute or two ago here, the first guy to really isolate and drill down on some of the weaknesses in Corey Davis' game, you know, and basically dealt with a caliber of competition, smaller college, you know, Matt.
That was the biggest thing.
College.
That was the biggest thing.
Nobody's done that a lot yet.
No.
About Corey Davis.
No. I mean, you have people will say it, but not like really hone in on that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's only played against MAC competition. Corey Davis, I mean, you know, for me, obviously, I come from a smaller school. So, you know, the MAC competition, I don't really care about. Like, if the guy can play football, he can play football. He just wasn't playing like he was this past year when he was coming out of high school. So he didn't have the same schools recruiting him. You know, for me, the guy can play football and he can run routes. He can catch the ball. And he can get down the field. You know, Mike Williams, he's a big physical receiver, but he doesn't run the same routes. And I feel like bringing the next receiver in here is going to be the number two wide receiver, and you need a guy who can replace Robert Woods, a guy who can run real routes, you know, and be able to work the entire field and not just as a red zone threat, not just as a guy who can jump up over guys.
Jump ball target.
Yeah,
right? You don't need that.
I mean, you don't need that.
He could help. Mike Williams is going to help wherever he goes
to. He's definitely going to help. But if you draft Mike Williams, then you're hoping that one of the guys on your roster is a guy that can really step up and be the guy who can run routes for you and work the underneath.
Why is that so important? I think I know the answer, but that's important to Tyrod, to any quarterback.
Right. You need to have guys.
He's a reliable route runner.
Right.
Where you're going to be.
Because, you know, obviously you're going to throw the ball down the field, but we need first downs too.
Yeah.
So I need a guy who can work the middle, a guy who can work routes and get open on a consistent basis and catch the ball on a consistent basis. I don't want to have to always throw jump balls. Those are 50-50 balls. So if you throw 50-50 balls, you throw 10 of them, you might complete 5 of them. But guess what? How many first downs did we get out of that?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
We need to be able to pick up first downs and stay on the field. That was an issue with our offense last year. We couldn't stay on the field consistently. You need a guy who can run routes.
All right, that's our mock draft roundup. We'll do it again next Friday. You can catch the written version of it on the website, buffalobills.com, tomorrow. They round up and review some of the mock drafts and some of the picks that are linked to the Buffalo Bills. So look for that on the website, buffalobills.com, tomorrow. Donald and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones here until 3 o'clock this afternoon, coming to you live from One Bills Drive, talking a lot about the draft. That should not surprise you since the draft is less than 2 weeks away. Our Twitter poll deals with the draft. What could the Bills do in the first round that might surprise you? Trading up is one of the options, and people think that would surprise them a lot. A couple of tweets on this. WBHC tweets in, the Bills' weakest area right now is defense. First-round pick has to be a defender. It's that simple. Maybe not that simple, but I do think that's the direction they're headed in. I do think it's going to be defense.
It's never that simple.
Right.
It's never that simple.
Not with, you know, if O.J. Howard's sitting out there, yeah. If one of those good receivers is sitting out there, certainly they would consider it.
Yeah, people always think it's that simple until you get into that position and it's like, oh, man, like everybody who we love is sitting right here.
Yeah.
So who do we take right now?
Right.
And it's a deep defensive draft. Maybe we should just go ahead and take O.J. Howard.
Settle for a lesser corner and right. Get a great tight end maybe?
Exactly.
Well, who knows?
You know, who
Here's
knows?
An interesting tweet. What would be the most surprising move the Bills could make? Justin Heilsey tweets in, if trading up surprises you, you haven't seen Doug Whaley do anything. Well, he's done it twice. Whaley's been in charge of three drafts. Did it to get Sammy Watkins, obviously a big trade up, a bold move. The jury's still out on that, I believe. Many people don't. And then he moved up a little bit to get Reggie Ragland, gave up a fourth rounder this year to get Reggie Ragland. I don't have a problem with those trade ups, either one of them just yet. They paid a dear price to move up to get Sammy Watkins because they believe he's, in their words, a generational player. We'll see if he is. That chapter hasn't been written yet.
The only trade ups that I can remember are the two that you just said, and that's Sammy and Reggie Ragland. That doesn't mean that that's his thing. Like, he goes into the draft and says, I want to trade up to get people every year. You know, it just doesn't – if you fall in love with the player, and every organization does this at some point. Like, they will fall in love with the player, and so they will trade up to get that guy. Atlanta did it with Julio Jones. They traded away a lot to get Julio Jones, and it worked out for him, you know. Sammy, obviously, with his foot issues and stuff like that, he hasn't worked out to the same level as, you know, Julio Jones yet, and hopefully he does. But Sammy has the same talent level as a Julio Jones. So he can be that player. He just had the foot issue, you know. So if it works out, then we won't even be talking about this anymore. That's not like Doug Whaley's calling. He wants to just trade up. That is not his thing. But if he falls in love with a guy, you know, he will do that. I just don't see it happening this year with only six picks. I just don't think they're going to trade up this year.
Yeah, Reggie Ragland, they moved up eight spots last year, and they traded away a fourth-rounder last year and a fourth-rounder this year, right? No, I'm sorry. They traded a fourth-rounder this year and flipped in the second round last year to move up eight spots, player they really liked. Unfortunately, in both Ragland's case and Sammy's case, they both had injuries last year, which kept them off the field, so you don't get the full impact of those trades. But you're right. I don't I don't know that that's Doug Whaley's trademark, trading up. It's happened twice in three drafts. So I don't know. We're going to talk about quarterbacks when we return. People love talking about quarterbacks. We'll do that also with Jeff Christensen, quarterback guru. He's worked with Cardale Jones and several other NFL quarterbacks and some of these prospects. That's coming up in the next hour, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports.
Update from One Bills Drive, where the NFL now is trying to figure out who's next as far as officiating. Dean Blandino, who's been vice president of officiating since 2013, has decided to step aside from the job, explore other opportunities. Reports have him linked to network television to be an officiating commentator. Dean Blandino, the vice president of officiating, will remain with the league until the end of May, and search for his successor has begun. Blandino joined the NFL in 1994 as an intern. What's critical about this is that the league is ready to implement its centralized replay system this coming year. Blandino was expected to be an integral part of that, and now he will be gone from the scene when they start making the replay calls from New York. NFL reeling from the news yesterday that Steelers chairman and owner Dan Rooney has passed away, one of the NFL's most influential and popular executives. He was 84 years of age. Rooney had a major role in establishment of the so-called Rooney Rule, created in 2003, and helps forces teams to interview qualified minority candidates for head coaching and senior football operations positions. Dan Rooney passing away at the age of 84. The Detroit Lions say they are in the early stages of contract talks with quarterback Matt Stafford. He's got 1 year left on his five-year, $76 million deal. It's not done yet, the Lions GM Bob Quinn says. We're in the early stages. Lions president Rod Wood let the cat out of the bag late yesterday, saying the NFL will release its schedule next Thursday. The schedule coming out next Thursday, according to the Lions. The Raiders actively negotiating with running back Marshawn Lynch, who has decided he wants to seek reinstatement to the National Football League. And the Bisons on the road for the first time this year. They're in Scranton-Wilkes-Barre to start a three-game set tonight. Buffalo 1-5, lost 2 in their season-opening homestand. They lost in extra innings 2-1 to Rochester yesterday. Tonight, right-hander Matt Latos gets the start on the mound. The Bisons in Scranton-Wilkes-Barre, 6:35 tonight. And that is the sports update. We are coming to you live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, we're just less than 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. All the quarterback talk and talk with Cardale Jones the other day led us to our next guest. He is a former NFL quarterback, a former draft pick of the Cincinnati Bengals, who is now a quarterback guru. In fact, he runs a quarterback camp, not just one, but several of them all over the country. Happy to have Jeff Christensen live with us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Jeff, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones. Thank you very much for being with us here today.
How are you?
Good.
We're doing great, yeah. Cardale brought your name up the other day. Says he went back and did some work with you this offseason. Talk about your relationship with Cardale and how you've helped him out over the years, Jeff, if you would, please.
Well, a lot of these guys, you know, they have excessive talent in college, and they can do several things or four or five things a tad improperly that creates inconsistent ball flight in the NFL. They get in the NFL and they get humbled very quickly because obviously everybody on the field is really good. So just educating him on the causes and effects of what makes a ball come out of your hand perfect on various routes, and whether it be front side shallow routes or front side vertical routes or backside, or what you do when you come off of one to go to two to go to three, and you got to go from left to right with your shoulders, knees, and hips. And it's just really an education system, basically.
Now, when you're trying to, you know, teach these guys all of these different aspects of the game, especially at the NFL level, how hard is it becoming every year with the way the college game is?
Actually, at first, it's a great question. It was difficult. As the years have passed by, it's gotten very easy because the stuff I do is basically all out of reaction. They never know where they're throwing it until the last possible millisecond after they've completed their drop based on either visual situations I set up or verbal. But what happens is the teaching aspect of it has been so across the board, and I'm sorry to say not proper but improper, that a lot of things I do haven't seen them or felt them before. They haven't experienced it. And so once they do it 35, 40, 50 times, and it feels more comfortable and easier to them, and they see their ball becoming more accurate with less effort, as far as less arm effort and more overall body effort, it feels smoother. And once they buy in mentally, it makes the teaching very, very refreshing, and it makes them, they learn at a very fast level. So once they've bought in with that much talent, then it usually is a pretty good experience.
Jeff Christensen, former NFL quarterback, our guest. He is the man behind Throw It Deep Academy, a series of quarterback camps, most of them in the Midwest. Jeff, I'm intrigued by that. Where are they getting the improper technique from? Who's teaching them incorrectly, and at what level does that occur? Is that high school or even younger, do you think?
Well, it's younger, I'm sad to say, because there, you know, if you, you know, 20 years ago, there were, you know, 30 of us doing this. Now there's literally 250. And social media, they open a website, they throw a few cones out, they grab a whistle, they take Timmy out and convince Dad to pay me $100 a day, and I'll help you become a better quarterback. And, oh, by the way, I played semi-pro football. So basically you never played in high school if you played semi-pro football, really. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing is so watered down and antiquated. They think that they can go to a camp and listen to a guy like me talk or listen to Justin Fuente talk, write down some stuff, record some stuff on their iPhone, and go back and mimic the drills. That's all great and good, right until there's a problem. And the kid gets there and he's got all this skill, but he doesn't have the right information as to how do I get better. So
So I did camps for many, many years and went around the country and said so and asked various coaches, you know, why do you do this? What is this accomplishing? Well, here's why I'm doing it. Here's why I'm doing this, and here's what it accomplishes. And I'm looking at it and I'm going, well, no, it doesn't. It's exactly wrong. It's not accomplishes. It doesn't accomplish anything. It actually is creating a hindrance. So when I created the system that I developed, it's all from the ground up. And it's no different than blocking and tackling. If your feet are out of position, you're not going to be in perfect balance. In order to be as accurate as you have to be with anything, a shot put, a discus, pitching a baseball, hitting a baseball, hitting a golf ball, throwing a football, shooting a basketball, you better have balance. If you're out of balance, your odds of accuracy go down. They diminish, obviously, greatly. So it's all ground-up based teaching. And as I've gotten older, that knowledge of how that's supposed to look has just been completely overlooked. Everybody's caught up in the arm, and a very interesting statement now being made by quarterbacks, by people about quarterbacks. He has a lot of arm talent. They all have arm talent. That's why, you know, that's why they're quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. But now it's become an issue, and it should be a non-issue. All the great ones have one thing in common: they all have great feet.
Jeff, when you're training these guys, how do their offensive coordinators take to it?
I've got open door policy now with eight for sure, and maybe as many as 11, 12 NFL teams.
Okay.
Because they have finally figured out now that I really don't get in their heads. I really don't talk to them about cover 4, cover 6, cover 9, cover 37. If you see the safety here, you should go over here. I don't do any of that. What I do is I ask the player, because they're mature, you know, what's the structure on you when you throw the backside dig to your X receiver? What are all the different ways you do it? What's the underneath route look like? And then I orchestrate the drills based on exactly what they do. And then I don't care what the defense is, because if their eyes tell them to throw it to the X versus the tight end versus the halfback out of backfield, I make them move in all the different ways after being involved in football 45 years, but I know a quarterback has to move on all those different throws. And the NFL, you and I both know, you have to move a multitude of ways in a millisecond and be able to shoot the ball accurately, because that's where you make your money. So a lot of guys have now finally figured out I really don't try to be his coach. Mm-hmm. I'm nothing more than when you are going to throw this route this way off of a seven-step play action, when you hit your back foot, stick your feet in the ground like this, make sure your butt's like this, make sure your torso's like this, make sure your shoulder's like this, and when you decide to set the ball like this, then when you spin it, make sure you feel this with your fingers. And so it's just exactly what a golf swing coach teaches golfers, nothing more.
On the line with Jeff Christensen, former NFL quarterback coach. His website is throwitdeep.com. He runs quarterback academies all over the Midwest. Jeff, I'm wondering what the basic raw materials that you need to work with are. You were talking about arm talent a second ago, but you can teach technique, and you're talking about all the technique that goes into it, footwork and body positioning, but what are the essentials? What do you need to work with to be a successful NFL quarterback?
That's interesting, because I don't do anything. I mean, it's old school training, like I got taught as a kid. I was with Dan Marino yesterday down in Miami, and we were laughing. I was down there working with Ryan Tannehill, and so we were talking about when you were a kid, is this not what you went through? Yeah, you too. Yeah, literally, I need a guy who's willing, and a few devices, not many. I mean, a goalpost, a couple things where I impede what they can and can't do with their arm. It's old school knowledge as to cause and effect. And that's what it is. And I don't use a lot of devices. I sure as heck don't use a beach in California, and I never had a guy go out in the ocean and throw footballs, I promise you. So it's the whole thing, these gimmicks that people at the lowest levels, fathers of 12-year-olds, have bought into, is basically, in football terms, just out of control. And it's about educating young people on how you're supposed to let the ball leave your fingertips. Cardell, the biggest change we made was this year, and I put up with it last year with him. I didn't really get into it much because I could see that he was going to fight it. But there have been some times, speaking with his quarterback coach, David Lee, when he was out there, when he misses, he missed kind of ugly a few times. Mm-hmm. And I said, now look, you're gripping the ball wrong. You gotta grip it like this, and here's why. Oh, I've only gripped it like that my whole life. I can't. I said, listen, bud, it'll take you 10 days. It'll take you 1,000 throws. And then the ball will, the spin rate on the ball will go up, believe me. And your accuracy will go up. It'll start feeling comfortable. And he acted like he was not going to do it. And then, of course, 9 days later, he called me back all excited. You know, Coach, I've been working on that grip, and, you know, it's really working really well. I said, well, but there's a reason why, you know, Dan Marino, Montana, Favre, Elway, there's a reason why they all gripped it like that. So, you know, it's just it's an interesting tennis match back and forth of information. But when you get a guy like Cardell, and E.J. Manuel and these guys that are really good people, it's really quite enjoyable to watch them grow.
Now, Jeff, I know you work with guys like Cardell and guys who are young coming into this game, but how often do you get one of the great ones, you know, that might be in a slump or something like that, that will come and work with a guy like you?
Well, that's an interesting question. I've gotten 4 or 5 of them over the years. The more successes they have, I was speaking with Ryan Tannehill last week and the last 2 days. He's made such unbelievable strides. I said, so now here's the deal. Your 15% is a number I would throw out there, better than you were when we started. He said, no, I agree, maybe 20. I said, yeah, maybe from a drill standpoint, maybe 25. But I saw in the games, I saw you get more accurate on the various throws that in the past didn't throw that efficiently. Now, because you've retained so much of the information, we're starting in a much higher place. Mm-hmm. So now it's like my job is basically to get you 3 or 4% better every year and have you retain it. And learn what drill to do on your own if you miss a few high to your backside and what's probably causing it and things to magnify in your mind when you do the next one. So what are we talking about here? Well, we're talking about basically 35 to 45 throws a season. So the difference between the great ones, when they get those 47 throws a year, 3.5 a game, and a guy is covered, and when I spoke with Coach Gase about this at length, I said, there's going to be your quarterback's going to throw into coverage 8 times every game all year long. And he said, well, what are you talking about? I hope not. I said, no, he's going to throw it into coverage 8 times. I said, why? Because all 5 guys are going to be covered in the NFL perfectly. And when you turn from 1 to 2 to go to 3 on the checkdown, there's going to be a linebacker who runs 4 or 5 running right with that guy. Mm-hmm. And so I can either hit that shoebox perfect where my guy can catch it, or it's going to be incomplete, but it's not going to be picked. Those are the 8 throws a game that win and lose games at this level. And Brady just does it over and over and over and over and over. And so those are the throws we're talking about, that excessive accuracy when a guy is covered. And so when they start looking at it that way, and as soon as I was done talking, Coach Gase said, you know what? You're exactly right. I never looked at it that way. I said, yeah, it's the guy that panics when he sees that picture and throws a pick. Those are the guys that we're all trying to replace. The guy that throws it incomplete or goes 5 for 8 completions with perfect throws, normally those plays are what?
third down and five, third down and six, third down and seven. They move the chains. Now we kick a field goal. Now we go to overtime. Now we beat you. And those are the 47 throws we're talking about with the great. So when they come to me and we go over this, some buy in and some don't. And ironically, in my opinion, after being in this game 45 years, the ones that buy in and just go to work and do that and accept it, inevitably, every one of them I've gotten have had better years the following year because now they're thinking right. They're not bothered by that picture. They know I'm going to throw it where my guy gets it and nobody gets it. A punt doesn't beat us, but an interception does.
Hey, Jeff, you talked about your work with Tannehill. You've also worked, I believe, a lot with Jimmy Garoppolo, who has not had the volume of throws and the amount of experience a guy like Tannehill has. How do you get those guys better, and what, you know, how do you continue to work with guys who don't play much like a Jimmy Garoppolo to this point in his career anyway?
Well, Jimmy, the only person Jimmy's ever been with is me. When I met him, he was a 15-year-old linebacker in high school. And his high school coach called me, and so we turned him into what he turned into. The reality is when these guys are doing what they do, when they do it, how often they do it, whether they're backup or whether they're a starter, it's all about feeling. So when you see a picture, because they're all visuals, right? We've taught them that with iPhones. They're all visual learners. So when they see that picture, they know they're going to throw the ball right now, this way, in that spot. And that's just like a golf swing or a guy hitting a baseball or whatever it may be. So it's really setting their arm and their habits in play. So in conjunction with their feet, knees, and hips and their balance and what they're doing with their feet. So their arm only knows one feeling. And that's where you go back to the way we do what we do. Your feet tell your arm when it's go time and when it's no time. And when your arm starts trusting that feeling, that's when guys get really, really, really accurate. And that's what's happening with Ryan Tannehill right now. Kirk Cousins is a tremendous student. Same goes for him. Drew Stanton, since I've had Drew for 3 years, he's been 7-3 as a starter. And he's bought into this whole concept of do the drills this way, and if it doesn't feel right, then just get off of that guy and throw the check down. Because normally there's something going on around you that's put your feet in a precarious position, and the ball could be errant or be late, and those are bad experiences. So there's no time to panic in this league. Brady just proved it on the biggest stage of all time. Until you're chasing 9 points with 6 minutes to go in the game,
yeah.
7 minutes to go in the game.
Yeah.
And if you just stay the course, and so there's a whole talk I gave to 200 kids the other day. There's no other quarterback in the game that would have did what he did, the way he did it. There's every other quarterback in the league, I promise you, would have threw a pick in the third quarter thinking they had to win the game. Mm-hmm. But he stayed on his path and just kept doing the little things, and he was accepted of punts, and he just was the last man standing in the end. But he stayed regiment with his accuracy on his checkdowns and moved the sticks. He never panicked, and that's why he's maybe the greatest of all time.
Jeff, I don't know if you've worked with any of these guys, but how hard is it to work with a mobile quarterback, let's just say like a Tyrod Taylor, who's known his whole life that he can get out of trouble with his legs, and so it might seem as if he'll get a little frantic in the pocket or something like that. How hard is it to work with those guys?
Great question. Sorry about all these long-winded answers, but I don't know how else to answer them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great question. Those guys are tough because they've had so many successes along the way with their feet, right? I mean, inevitably, the guys that leave a little early, Randall Cunningham, right when he starts to take off, the post route pops open for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And you go back on film and go, oh, my God, why didn't you stay in there a little bit longer? Again, it's how you orchestrate the drills, how you walk them through what you want them to think, what they're seeing, the physical diversions I give them. So the way I rush them as a rusher, have three guys rush them so they can't run. Make them sit in there so what they see visually out of their peripheral vision, they understand I can still get the ball off in this scenario. If my feet stay calm and this guy is standing right here 3.5 feet firm with his hands up, I can still spin. I can slide to the right 6 inches and still spin it perfectly. And building that confidence with what they – it's basically a situation where their eyes for years have told them it's go time. And they've trusted their eyes more than they trust the feeling of their feet and understand that I can buy a little bit of time here and shoot it at the last possible second for a touchdown. So a lot of it is how you talk them through the drill, how you go over what I just said to you, how you tell them the situation. 3rd and 6, no timeouts left. You can't run because you need a touchdown. There's only 9 seconds to go in the game. You got to hang in the pocket here, dude. Just do this with your feet. And so then they start buying into it. Then they start having success as far as accuracy. And then making them understand that there's a home run at the end of the line if they can hang in there 1 millisecond longer. And just doing that over and over and over with them.
Hey, Jeff, one last question, and it goes back to Cardale Jones, the Bills' own Cardale Jones. What should we look for? What sort of evidence might there be for fans watching, like, preseason games or for us as we keep an eye on some of these workouts? What should we look for to look for signs of development in Cardale Jones as a passer?
Well, he's going to be smoother. His feet are better, so he's going to be smoother. His head's going to be he's going to look like a baseball pitcher a heck of a lot less than he did before. His feet are going to hit the ground quicker. He's going to be more accurate with the ball. And the interesting thing about those issues, a lot of times there's a reason why Aaron Rodgers, Breeze, Brady, all the great ones look like they're just back there having a cup of coffee. And they're sliding around all that chaos, and they flip it, and it's a 25-yard comeback or, you know, a first down. But it looks calm with what they're doing. And, again, I hate to be a broken record. It goes back to their feet. And so you'll see him, it'll look to people like he's calmed down. He has less moving parts going on. Well, he really hasn't calmed down. He now understands how to slide his feet, front, back, up, back, to the front side, to the back side, up in the pocket, back in the pocket. And when you move in those little areas, how to do it smoothly and quickly and concisely, so when you throw it, your head moves very little, and much like a great golf swing. Hmm. And so he'll be for sure more accurate. Now, I can't make him throw it to the right guy. That's in his court.
Right.
But he's a great young man, and I can only promise people one thing. He wants to be great. I mean, he really does. When I went into Columbus, picked me up on time every time, got to work, dripping sweat. He was not 20 minutes late, texting people, had to leave early. There was none of that going on. He got there early and stayed late. I mean, he wanted to watch the films afterwards. So he wants to be great, and that's a lot of times. A lot of them say they want to be great, and then they're 25 minutes late getting there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're the president and CEO of their corporation. And the ones that work it, like Tyrod Taylor and the great ones, because he's an incredible worker, normally they win in the end.
Hey, Jeff, your quarterback academy is open to anybody, right? If people are looking for information, they should go to your website?
Yeah, I don't turn anybody away. If you're a third-string sophomore and high school quarterback, I'm not trying to build a name. I'm just trying to help kids. So I don't really, you know, as long as I get them better. One of the greatest compliments I think ever given to me is the fact now that I've gotten older, I've got like 40 kids that have come to me over the years that are now high school coaches. And those third-string kids in high school normally wind up being coaches. And we treat them exactly as we do the kid that has 19 stars and has been All-State for 7 years thinking that he's a big swinger. So it's all about keeping the game whole at the end of the day, and we pride ourselves in that. So, yeah, we take on everybody.
All right, Jeff's website is throwitdeep.com, quarterback training, the Throw It Deep quarterback academies with former NFL quarterback Jeff Christensen. Jeff, this has been fascinating. Thank you very much for joining us today.
I appreciate it, guys. It means a lot.
Okay. Jeff Christensen from throwitdeep.com, working with Cardale Jones, working with all those other quarterbacks. Some interesting stuff there. We'll be back to talk about that and a couple of other things when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show, John Murphy and Donald Jones. We will not be here on Monday for the Easter holiday. We will not be. We will not have a show on Monday, Donald. So
we got that day off.
Got
huh?
that day off coming. Yeah.
All right. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too.
I'm going back home. What are you going to do for the weekend?
Just hanging. You know, Easter stuff. You know, hanging. The weather's okay now, so
you can watch some playoffs start this weekend, right?
NBA playoffs.
NBA playoffs.
Yeah, I've got to lock into one series. You think I should lock into the Celtics? Is that what you're telling me?
Now I'm a Knicks fan, so, mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about that.
It hurts me. But the Celtics, I like their point guard. I like to watch him because he's so small. I like to watch him go to work. You know, if Westbrook and James Harden weren't having the season that they were having, he would really be in the conversation for MVP.
All right, I'm going to lock into the Celtics. You convinced me. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're going to lock into the NFL for the next half hour, and this is the part of the show where we talk about some of the news items in the NFL and decide whether they are fake or are they real. Fake news, real news, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. A lot of fake news out there, as you know, in football especially this time of year with the draft coming up in less than 2 weeks. Fake or real? John Ross, 4.22 40 time in the combine, a blazer. Many people have him as the top wide receiver in the draft. Some people think he'll go in the top 10. Fake or real? John Ross in the top 10 in the NFL draft. Donald, I would say, yeah. I don't know if he'll be the first receiver chosen, but I think he'll be one of the top three, obviously, and maybe get picked ahead of Corey Davis or Mike Williams. Yeah, I got him in the top 10. I think that's real. What do you think?
So I'm going to go fake. And the reason that I'm going to go fake is just because of the injuries and the history that he has, the chronic knee issues, his size, the fact that, first of all, when he ran his 40, he got hurt at the combine. And then he had shoulder surgery recently, like within the last month, you know. So I think teams in the top 10 will be weary of taking him. And so I think he'll end up sliding into the teens. Not too far into the teens, though, but I think he will end up sliding into the teens. But the more and more I watch of him, and I know early, you know, I was very strong, in my opinion, against taking him. The more and more you watch, you do see him run some routes. You do see him really be able to change his speed and come in and out of his breaks. And so that's why you hear a guy like Bucky Brooks talk about that. He really is not just a burner blazer going down the field. So if he can stay healthy, I think he can be a good receiver in this league. More of a Antonio Brown type of receiver, T.Y. Hilton, who, you know, Bucky Brooks talked about. So I'm going to go fake, but, man, I would love to switch it to real. But I'm going to go fake.
Okay. Fake or real? Quarterbacks in the draft. Four quarterbacks in the first round. Bucky Brooks has four quarterbacks in his first round, and he has them going this way. Brooks has Deshaun Watson going sixth overall to the New York Jets. He has North Carolina, Trubisky going 17th overall to Washington. He has Patrick Mahomes going 13th overall to Arizona, and Deshaun Kizer going 30th overall to Notre Dame. Four quarterbacks in the first round in the draft this year, real or fake? I say fake. I think there's going to be three, maybe just two in the first round. There's an awful lot of quarterback hype out there right now, but I think it's probably going to be Watson and Trubisky in the first round, and maybe the rest of them coming, the other two coming in the second round. So I got fake on this one. I don't think four quarterbacks in the first round.
So I'm going to go with real on this one. Reason being because teams really reach for quarterbacks. And, you know, obviously none of these guys is anyone that – people are saying are going to be a game-changing quarterback right away. But we do know that the teams will reach for them. And because of that, I have to go real. And I think they're going to end up being four that go in the first round.
Four.
I think
even though people, Bill Polian, other well-respected people say none of them belong in the first round.
Yeah.
Ron Jaworski just the other day, none of them in the first round.
Even though they say none of them belong in the first round, in the very next breath, they'll usually say, but they're going to get drafted in the first round.
I don't know. I guess, you know, somebody's going to reach on a quarterback. Somebody's going to be disappointed on a quarterback. Somebody's program's going to be set back a year or two because they drafted a quarterback in the first round who wasn't ready.
Yeah, that's the truth. Now, the one guy that I think can end up slipping into the second round is Kizer, though. It seems like his draft stock is really falling, and he might end up slipping into the second round, but I'm going to go real on this one.
I think Mahomes and Kizer second round.
You think so? I think Mahomes is climbing, and I think he's going to go.
I think second round of the two of them. All right, real or fake, this is interesting. John Madden, the Hall of Fame coach, former broadcaster, did an interview the other day on Sirius XM NFL Radio, talking about, obviously, the Raiders move to Las Vegas. He thinks it's going to be a problem when teams get to play in Las Vegas. Here's John Madden's quote. "I would hate to have my team be in Las Vegas Saturday night before the game. He said, you have 55 guys, 45 of them can be perfect, but you've got that bottom 10, and you have to be as good as your last guy. If this thing goes through, which it already has, I think there's going to be a lot of problems like that. Players misbehaving in Las Vegas. Vegas will be a problem for teams, not just the home team, but the road team, before games. Real or fake? Donald, what do you think? Why are you dancing?
You know what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. So, no, listen, no, I think this is real. I do think that it's going to be a problem for teams. And I know a lot of guys when I played that would travel to Vegas and gamble $20,000 in a night and then say, I need to go back the next week because I lost $20,000.
Who do you know that does that?
Well, I can't say any names out there, but, you know, I do know a lot of guys that went out there and they gambled, big-time gamblers, you know. And so I think that this is going to be an issue because you will have guys that are staying in casino hotels. And so all you have to do is walk downstairs and walk into a casino, you know. You won't be able to police these guys like you think you would because there's just casinos all over the place. And that's just one part of it. But then you're talking about everything else that comes with Vegas when we say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. So I think this is going to be an issue, especially for those young rookies coming into the league.
Well, look, you don't have to stay at a hotel right on the strip, right, if you're in Vegas?
You don't. You definitely don't. But Uber is cheap and, you know, it's accessible. And so I think, like I said, especially those young rookies that don't get it, those young guys that's coming in, they have some money, they're like, oh, man, let's go down to Vegas. So, let's go down to the strip. Let's catch an Uber.
We're a couple of years away from the Raiders playing in Las Vegas. I think this is a fake issue. I think the first year, maybe two, that'll be discussed. Wednesday, press conference before your team, before the Bills go to play the Las Vegas Raiders. What are you going to do? Extra curfew? It'll be talked about. It'll be discussion. My sense is nothing will happen. Most players know that their livelihood's on the line. Mm-hmm. If they want to go to Vegas, as Donald said, they have enough money to go in the off season on the bye week. Some guys could fly out of here on Monday morning with Tuesday off or whatever, Monday night. They can do whatever they want in Las Vegas on their own time. I don't think this is going to be a problem. I really don't. And look, I've never been to Vegas, so I'm unqualified to say this, but I don't know that it's that much different than any other major North American city in terms of temptation, in terms of access to gambling. You don't have to drive very far to get to a casino from where we sit right here, Donald. What are we talking about here?
Definitely don't have to drive very far to get to a casino, but, you know, Vegas is like, I don't know, it has that allure to it. It has that ring, Vegas, casino. It has, you know, it's warm out there. It's warmer than
if back to went, the weather we go.
Hey, it's warmer than if you went, you know, down the thruway to which casino was down there?
There's one in Seneca, Allegheny. There's one right in downtown Buffalo.
It is one in downtown.
What's the difference?
Yeah, but, you know, it's just a little
bit
warmer.
You're going to bet more? What are you talking about?
And like I said, it's not just the casinos. It's everything else that comes with Vegas, you know. It's a lot more than just the casinos. It's the parties and all of that stuff. It's a lot in Vegas. It really is a lot to do out there and a lot of trouble that you can get into.
How is Vegas different than South Beach or Los Angeles?
It's really not. But when you're
is Miami a problem for teams when they go to Miami?
No.
No difference. I think it's a fake issue. It's a fake issue. One more, real or fake. Now, Dean Blandino is leaving the NFL, the vice president of officiating. The league has set up the centralized replay system, which many have thought was going to be kind of shepherded through by Dean Blandino, who I think has done a pretty good job as the VP of officiating for the last 3 or 4 years. There's one report, and I have it right in front of me, that says, is the league going to follow through now on the centralized replay now that Blandino is gone? Fake or real? Yeah, they're going to follow through. Of course, the league is not going to say it's fake. The league is not going to scrap centralized replay. Please don't tell me that this whole thing was set up with one guy in mind. You know, Blandino's pretty good, but he is not, you know, without him, we don't have anything. No, they're going to go ahead with centralized replay. You know, Alberto Riveron is his assistant. He'll probably, I would think, be next in line to be vice president of officiating and probably be in charge of the centralized replay review in New York. So, no, the NFL will not scrap centralized replay with Dean Blandino gone. That is fake. Donald, your thoughts?
I don't think they're going to. I think the only – so I'm going to go fake on this one. They're not going to scrap it just because he's gone. They'll scrap it if they have some real issues with it in the next, you know, couple of years. I don't even think they'll scrap it then. I think they'll just try to keep on trying to work on it so that they make sure they get to a point where it really works and it's all good. But I just don't see it being scrapped just because he's gone. So that's going to be fake.
Is it going to work as smoothly? Probably not. I think Blandino has demonstrated that he's pretty good about his review of replays, his analysis of replays. I think he is – as much as I don't like instant replay in the NFL, I think Dean Blandino's done a pretty good job of streamlining the operation and trying to get it to work as best as it can. But I think it's here to stay. They're not going to scrap the new centralized replay just because Dean Blandino is gone. No, sir. I don't believe it.
Dean Blandino.
Fake or real? Fake news, real news. Brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. Back in a moment with more of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
It is brought to you by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater. The preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned? We started out the afternoon, talking about the passing of Dan Rooney, longtime owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who passed away late yesterday. We spoke with Joe Horrigan, who is the executive director of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and he had some thoughts about the passing of Steelers chairman Dan Rooney.
But there are just those certain few that kind of transcend everything in the sense of what they meant to the game. And I really put to Dan Rooney in that category, because there's that intangible with some people that, you know, that isn't reflected necessarily on the football field, that Dan epitomized in a quiet, professional manner. He did things that he never took credit for, and he was very careful not to take credit for.
Joe Horrigan talking about the passing of Dan Rooney. Also on the show today, we talked a couple of minutes ago with Bucky Brooks, the NFL Network, a former Bills receiver and NFL Network draft analyst. In his latest mock draft, he has the Bills at number 10 in the first round, going with Clemson wide receiver Mike Williams, and Bucky Brooks talked about why.
In terms of the player, I think the player is outstanding. He's the natural number one receiver. He's a big body playmaker, a guy that kind of plays the game in a style that is reminiscent of Dez Bryant. He understands how to work in between the hashes. And when you look at the Buffalo Bills, Sammy Watkins is clearly established as the number one receiver, but he's more of a vertical playmaker. At some point, they need to find someone who can do the dirty work. That is the best way to kind of maximize the protection from the quarterback. So that's kind of what I had in mind.
Bucky Brooks, a very businesslike, matter-of-fact explanation, Donald. This is why I said this, and this is what I think.
Next question. Straight to the point. This is what it is.
Next question. I don't know. We don't know the way the draft's going to go. There are going to be some twists and turns over the 13 days before the first round of the draft, so we'll be here to talk about it. We'll review the mock drafts, have some more draft experts on, and continue to throw it around a little bit, who we think the Bills might go. I'll tell you what. I don't think we're going to get to the 27th, the Thursday, April 27th, and have a lock on who the Bills are going to pick. Do you? I don't think that's no way that's in the cards.
I don't think so, because sitting at the 10th position, there's so much that can happen in the first nine picks that it really changes the outlook on what you're doing at sitting at number 10. You know, I can see if it was, you know, we were sitting at 2 or 3 or something like that, then you could think, okay, these two first guys are going to go, and then, you know, our guy's going to be sitting there. But at number 10, so many different things can happen. You just got to wait and see how it plays out.
Our Twitter poll today dealt with the draft, and let's recap the results of that. We wanted to know what you thought would be the biggest surprise for the Buffalo Bills with that number 10 overall pick. What would be the most surprising move the Bills could make in the first round of the NFL draft? 3,400 votes in via Twitter. Pretty evenly distributed. 32% of you say you'd be most surprised if the Bills traded up in the draft. 26% of you said you'd be surprised if the Bills drafted a quarterback in the first round. 22% of you said you'd be surprised if the Bills went with a wide running back in the first round. 20% say you'd be surprised if the Bills did not get a wide receiver or defensive back in the first round.
I don't know.
I don't know what to make of that.
It's closer than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
I thought it would be a landslide trade up because we only have six picks, but I guess this is a thing. I guess, you know, that's really Doug Whaley's thing. Is that his thing? Is that a thing?
Trading up? I don't know.
Is that a thing? Is this what he wants to do every draft? I don't know. I don't think they're going to trade up with only six picks, which means you're going to end up trading, unless they trade away players. What players do you have to trade away to trade up in the top 10 to get a draft pick? I mean, you have to trade away some very good players, and I don't see that happening.
Kevin Betters tweets in, I just hit don't draft wide receiver or cornerback to see the percentages. Are people really serious about the running back or messing around wide receiver? You know the Bills are going to move up to the second pick and take Mahomes. No, I don't. That'd be nuts. It's not going to happen.
The second pick.
I put money on
Mahomes.
That. I'd go to Las Vegas and bet against that. Hey, one of our guests today was Butch Rolle, the former Bills tight end, who's coming to Buffalo in a couple of weeks, Saturday, May 6th. Butch spends a lot of time here, but he's coming back for the Butch Rolle Foundation, his Caring for Kids Foundation, and his charity celebrity bowling tournament. It is Saturday, May 6th, 1 o'clock at Airport Lanes, Genesee Street in Cheektowaga. If you're looking for more information on that, go to butchrollefoundation.org. Butch Rolle's charity bowling tournament with some of his former Bills teammates and Donald Jones.
I think I'm going to go and try to teach him how to spin the ball.
That's right.
Yeah, I have four bowling balls, so wow. Go out there and see what's up.
He's for real. Thanks for our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Our studio producer is Brayton Wilson. Production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, James Donovan, our producer, Jay Harris. We'll see you Tuesday at noon with the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.